pledge our allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Mary, can we have a roll call?
Yes. Boro?
Here.
Dubrow?
Here.
Bosco?
Here.
Hartzell?
Here.
Heller? Johnson? Meigs? Lappert? Phillips?
Here.
Levine? Kilmer? Sullivan?
Here. Okay, we have a quorum. Next up is open period for public participation. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak on an item that's not on the agenda? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back and move on to the consent calendar. Do we have any discussion on the consent calendar?
I'd like to pull this H.
Is there something you'd like to talk about?
Actually, I was surprised to see that there was a modification of the APA in the consent calendar. I know I haven't come to a lot of these meetings, but it's a pretty unusual step, I would think, to do something that changes the way the financial policy affects all of the individual members of JPA. One, detrimental to Hartford, where I live, and I'm afraid it's going to probably add to the another breach that will be added to the arbitration.
Other than that, we move items A through G.
Second.
Okay, before we go on, is there anybody from the public that wishes to discuss an item on the agenda? Or on the consent calendar? I'm sorry. Okay, seeing none. All right, I haven't. Normally we don't pull items off the consent calendar. Commissioner Sullivan?
Aye.
It's allowed. Interesting.
All right, we'll do it tonight. We'll go off right to it right after this. Okay, I'll call the question. All those in favor of approving the consent calendar A through G?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed? Opposed. Here we have, okay, let's go to 4H. What's the
well, a couple okay. things that are I've discussed with our attorney. One, it adds San Quentin to a JPA, which is made up of member agencies. San Quentin really has no call on the treatment facility, and if the treatment facility becomes full for whatever reason, San Quentin could be excluded from that. So including them in a management document like this is a modification JPA that does not qualify. Second of all, this causes detrimental cost shifting that affects citizens of Larkspur, and I'm opposed to that. And it also detrimentally affects the citizens of the Ross Valley. So that said, I'm going to oppose this. I'm going to vote against it.
Do I address that? Can we address
it? Yeah, just one. Do you have any other comments, Commissioner Sullivan?
That's fine.
Jason, you want to address the comment?
Oh, yeah. Thanks for the comments, Commissioner Sullivan. This is a financial policy that CMSA has had in some form since 1998. It's not an amendment to the JPA. It's never been characterized as an amendment to the JPA. It simply sets forth the procedures that the CMSA board establishes for the agency to implement the revenue regional charge policies of the JPA. The JPA clearly says that this board establishes the regional charge. The members are required to pay that, and that regional charge can be allocated based on dwelling units, based on a flow and strength of wastewater. These call volume quality, essentially flow and strength. Or it can be based just on volume if this board decides that it doesn't want to consider the quality. So we've always had a procedure similar to this, just so staff knows how to implement the particular allocation method that the board selects. Now, the board's always selected the EDU method. Mm-hmm. So the prior versions of this policy had the procedures of how we invoice the members using the EDU method. So that's kind of the history of the policy. So it's not an amendment to the JPA. It's just a board-adopted financial policy that's been around for 14 years, to my knowledge, probably in some forms beyond that. And the JPA agencies have always followed the provisions in prior versions of this policy. Now, what happened at the last board meeting is the board approved two procedures that were flow-based procedures. So that way, if the board chose at some point in the future to allocate the regional charge of the CMSA to the member agencies, there would be a procedure now in a board policy on how we would implement that. So that's all this is. This is not an amendment to the GAPA. An amendment to the GAPA technically would have to go back to each individual agency's board and for approval. And City of Larkspur also. So right. All four agencies. So these are just financial policies established by the board.
Well, obviously I disagree. And this will be yet another item added to our arbitration. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments from the commissioners?
I guess my only comment would be a query, and that is, other than saying that you disagree, I guess I'd like to understand, because I'm fairly new to this myself, the foundation for your disagreement.
Well, it's a relatively complex legal argument, I think. But the first argument that I would make was that San Quentin doesn't belong in this document at all. It's not part of the GPA. It's not part of our agreement, and it shouldn't even be in this document. The second one is that the history of the agency is that it's collected on the basis of EDUs, and it was EDU change at St. Quentin a year ago that threw this whole system into chaos and created all kinds of different things, as far as I'm concerned, going on, including some of these new changes or interpretations of how the service charge should be had. The third thing is that the service charge on the flow volume based system, which is not, maybe somewhere else in Diamond, increases the cost to Ross Valley and Larkspur by about 20%. And that's painful at multiple levels.
You agree? If I could ask through the chair, you agree it increases our cost?
Well, there's an item which is number 7. Which shows the regional charge allocation for various methods for the board to consider, to provide staff, how to base the charge for next year. This is just a procedural document. It doesn't amend the GPA. San Quentin is a satellite collection agency that's there to stay. They've had this contract with Ross Valley, so they've always been included within Ross Valley's EDU count. And all this does, it just shows them separately as a collection system agency. It does not designate them as a GPA member agency pursuant to the GPA agreement, because as Commissioner Sullivan states, San Quentin is not a part of the GPA. They weren't signatory to it, as we discussed last month with that legal opinion that we received from Gary Ray Ganty. But this central document, has been revised in that the procedures, the two flow-based procedures that were approved last month, they've been incorporated into this. And then we just rearranged, some of the language so it kind of increases the readability and flow of the procedure. So the really substantive changes to this procedure compared to the one that we have in place right now is these two flow-based procedures that were approved last month. And the board directed us last month to integrate those procedures into this document. So we thought it would be appropriate just to bring the document back to the board for consideration approval, since we got direction to add the procedures to it.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, if I might, I don't feel it's appropriate to discuss this at this point, but I'd like some clarification from Jason or the attorney or from Ross Valley when we term another item for arbitration. I thought we had one item on arbitration, and we started to collect a laundry list of items, so at some point maybe the next meeting we get an update as to what's going on in arbitration.
Yeah, we can put on the agenda next time.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Anybody from the public wish to speak on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back. So a motion to approve or to bring this back in a later date?
Move to approve.
Second.
And a motion in a second. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed?
No.
Okay. Next up. Item number 5, Finance Committee Appointment. Jason?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Carr. So at the last month's board meeting, the board made the decision to remove Commissioner Johnson from the board's Finance Committee, and the board asked Commissioners Parr and Hartzell to send a letter to the Ross Valley Sanitary District Board of Directors, essentially just briefing them of the board's decision, and asking that they propose another Ross Valley representative or one of the Ross Valley alternates to serve on the committee, and that at tonight's meeting, this would be on the agenda, and the board would consider either appointing a Ross Valley representative or alternate as proposed by the district, or a San Rafael, you know, board member or alternate, or the board could not take any action, just wait until the July timeframe. So that letter was sent to the Ross Valley board. As of the day that this agenda packet was mailed, we had not heard back from the district regarding anybody to serve on the committee, so I sent emails to alternate commissioners Ager, Miggs, and Sullivan, you know, explaining, you know, what had happened and if they'd be interested in serving on the committee. And Commissioner Sullivan said that he was tied up and couldn't serve on the committee. Commissioner Ager said that he'd like to consider it, you know, after June. But Commissioner Miggs said that she was interested in serving on the committee and to inform the board of her interest. So then I sent an email to Commissioner DuPont to let him know of Commissioner Miggs' interest. So the options here in the staff report are the board can nominate and select a Ross Valley representative or alternate, Commissioner Guasco, or alternate Commissioner Miggs to serve on the committee, or just hold off on appointing someone until the July 10th meeting when the board normally nominates and selects board officers, appointments to the North Bay Watershed, and also to the Standing Finance Committee.
In our next Finance Committee meeting, we're going to be discussing
the operating budget and the 10-year financial forecast.
Okay.
And that would probably be, you know, in early May.
Okay. Anybody have a comment?
I'd be happy to nominate Commissioner and alternate Miggs to the Finance Committee.
Second. Do you guys, Ross Allen, do you have a... issue?
I think
it's imperative that somebody from your agency sit on the committee for purposes of the operating budget that's coming up so that we can get an insight from your agency as to you know, any concerns that you might have. So I hope Ms. Commissioner Miggs can serve. Okay, so I have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Opposed.
5-1.
5-1. Okay, next up is item number 6. Regional charge, volume quality allocation procedure.
So what's attached to the staff report is a procedure on how to allocate the agency's regional charge using the volume of wastewater sent to the agency, either the annual volume or the three-year average, and the quality, or in other words, the strength information from each district. As you know, the board, you know, adopted the two, well, approved the two flow-based procedures last month. We informed the board last month that the strength sampling for each collection agency had commenced in early March. And as we were gathering the strength data and revising the revenue management financial policy pursuant to board direction, we thought it was, you know, a fine time to go ahead and develop this procedure for volume quality. So the procedure that's attached, it essentially uses the flow beauty and TSS allocations that are in the JPA agreement, and the general approach and the equations that were in the regional charge alternative study that the board accepted at the January meeting. So this procedural document was reviewed with the Finance Committee last week at their meeting, and they thought it made sense. And their recommendation, along with staff's, is for the board to approve this procedure and direct us then to integrate this procedure into the revenue management financial policy. That way, then the policy has the procedures on how you implement EDU, volume quality, and volume to align with what's stated in Section 14 of the JPA.
Any comments? Commissioner Phillips?
Thank you. Two questions. I'll just ask a question rather than assume. The allocation for the flow BOD and TSS, that is 57, 18, 24, roughly. That reflects, I'm assuming, the relative cost of processing these materials?
Yeah, no, those percentages were developed, you know, through Central Marin wastewater studies during the Clean Water Grant days. So there was a lot of studies that were done in the late 1970s and a big report, and the outcome of that was the decision by all the member agencies to select the CMSA alternative, and part of that alternative was constructing this facility, buying the land, building the outfall, building the interceptors to bring the wastewater here from all the districts, pump station improvements. So it's detailed in the JPA, all these improvements, which ones were paid for solely by agencies, which ones were jointly paid for by different agencies, and the payments that were in a joint method, they had the allocation based on flow, TSS, and VOD from each of the districts using these percentages. So we thought it was just appropriate for that study that the board accepted and for this procedure to use these percentages that were used back in the Clean Water Grant days. These can be, you know, modified in the future. We would, you know, probably hire an engineering consultant that had experience with doing this type of evaluation, and they could take a look at how those allocations could change. But these are from the GPA agreement.
And there, just one other question on that. I don't know if there's studies or one thing or another, but if there are, do these percentages approximately reflect what's others are determining to be the relative cost?
Like other agencies in different parts of the state?
Yeah.
These percentages are specific to Central Marin and San Rafael Sand and Ross Valley and City of Larkspur and Sand 2 back in the 70s that was put in the JPA. You know, there's not many agencies that have a governance structure like CMSA and JPA with individual satellite collection agencies that through the Clean Water Grant days had to allocate based on flow, BOD, and TSS. And what we've talked about at some of our prior meetings here is that most agencies charge based on equivalent dwelling units or property units, something like that, because it's the easiest from an accounting perspective, a finance perspective. Not many agencies based on flow, BOD, and TSS. The only one that I'm familiar with is the South Bayside System Authority, which is in Redwood City, and they were established around the same time as CMSA to respond to the requirements of the Clean Water Act. So now their satellite collection agencies are, you know, the cities around there in the West Bay Sand District. And they have a structure similar to this on how they allocate their charge to all these satellite agencies. Their percentages are a little bit different, but they're based on probably studies that they did back in around the same time period. Could have been updated. So we just pulled these right from the JPA, you know, for use in the study.
Thank you.
Can I address that?
We're actually going through a flow-based study right now at the Ross Valley, and our consultant has pulled the numbers off the state. The state has readjusted these because over the last 30 years, people have changed their use, and so these numbers are clearly dated, and I would recommend strongly that you go to the consultants and get the more up-to-date numbers. The other thing that is that the VOD and TSS is heavily dependent on what's the source of your flow. So if you have, you know, 30 restaurants versus like 30 washing places, you have huge differences in suspended solids and the oxygenatable material. So it's important if we're going to assign costs system-wide that there be some analysis of the individual flow to set these rates, because that's going to some place that has a lot of restaurants is going to have more.
That's correct.
Going to cost
more. And that's what, you know, the percentages here are just, you know, from an aggregate basis. So if CMSA, you know, the board determined, okay, we need net revenues of $15 million. We'll allocate those revenues to flow BOD and TSS based on this. Then what we do is we measure the flow independently from each district. We measure the strength from each district to support what Commissioner Sullivan was saying. And then their allocation is based on what they're actually sending to CMSA as measured either periodically in terms of the strength or continuously in terms of the flow. So what Commissioner Sullivan said is addressed through these subsequent equations that are the bottom of page 1 and top of page 2. So everything's fairly allocated amongst the members based on what's being generated in their service areas.
But that comes with us collecting this data, or it comes from just hiring a consultant to...
Well, we collect the data ourselves, the flow and the strength, to allocate.
Okay, what about biosolids and TSS?
We measure in our laboratory.
Okay, so we measure DOD. Yeah. But we measure that.
For each district.
We quantify it.
That's right.
And we continually quantify it.
Well, we continually measure the flow right now, and as of beginning of March, we started gathering strength information.
So what would the consultants do? Give us a snapshot of a certain date?
Well, the consultants wouldn't look at what was happening in each district. They would come and look at CMSA and say, okay, CMSA, here's your treatment facility, here's the types of processes that you have, and they would look at these breakdowns here and say, okay, you have so many processes, you know, what could we allocate toward just flow, what pieces of equipment can we allocate just toward flow, which ones also include QD and TSS. So they would look at that just from a CMSA perspective on how you allocate those. But these are the ones that made sense. So we could always, you know, in the future, you know, hire a consultant and do a study to refine these numbers, but the actual allocation to the members would always be based on what they actually send to CMSA as measured on flow meters and through laboratory analyses. Pursuant to those individual equations that say unit cost and so forth at the bottom of the page.
I have a question. So we're considering going back as far as 3 years in the language I read, as far as coming up with prior year's actuals for fees, right? I mean, I think that's how I read it.
I don't understand prior year's actuals for.
Well, you've got each April, the operations department will provide finance staff with the annual volume of wastewater generated from each satellite collection entity for the previous April 1st through March 31st period, or prior 36-month period. Now, my question is does that mean that we're collecting fees that aren't really part of the current period that the billing, you know, the fees are to be paid to?
This section that you read under item one of the procedure, that's a collection of flow data. Mm-hmm. And that flow data can either be for a one-year period, mm-hmm. or it can be for a three-year period.
But prior years, yeah. I mean, it's not the actual flows for the current billing period.
Well, when we're developing the budget in April, we're going to get the flow from that point in time back 12 months.
Mm-hmm. Instead of estimating...
Estimating flow.
Forward.
Yeah, it's not estimation. It's using real, you know, information that we have.
It's prior 36 months, yeah. Prior 12 or prior 36 months. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The reason that we suggested the 36 months was because of...
Smooths it out.
Yeah.
Smooths it out.
That's correct.
So I was looking for the word variability and precipitation, essentially, where I was going.
Thank you. So I get the feeling that the separate agencies that make up the CMSA will no longer have any control over how the quantifying of this information is brought to CMSA. CMSA is going to do it all.
Well, CMSA would measure the flow with our flow meters, and that's the information that we would use, you know, in this first procedure here. And that's the same information that we present each month in our process report. That's part of the consent calendar.
Okay. And then I feel that it contradicts the JPA agreement in that we're changing the, you know, policy, basically, or procedure. Let's just say that we don't all agree.
Okay.
So my understanding, when it comes to these kinds of items that are within the JPA, that we all have to be in agreement to make these kind of changes. Am I wrong?
The CMSA board determines the charge of the agencies. That determination can be on volume and quality, it can be on EDUs, or it could be on just volume if the board decides they don't want to consider the quality. So that provision of the JPA has been there for since 1979. So this board each year could select which method from that section of the JPA. So this board has that authority. So that's not something that would go back to individual agencies, and it just needs four affirmative votes by this board pursuant to that, you know, voting section of the JPA to select and approve which one of those methods if the board wanted to use a method beside EDUs. So it's this board's discretion, essentially.
Okay, thank
you. That's pretty.
That's because in section 14 of the JPA under operating fund, it actually gives permission for those two plus variable methods for calculating the distribution of the regional charge.
That's right. So the authority is there in the JPA for this board to make a selection of.
It's the page that isn't numbered.
I'm not a lawyer, but is that the only binding agreement for that?
The JPA?
That's the statement.
You mean like the payment agreement that was developed for the bond?
That's a different one.
That's a separate agreement, and that's
right,
for debt service.
It's bonding. It's binding.
Yeah, but it's for the bond.
It's for the debt service. This is only for the operating fund, the regional
the
charge. Those are two separate revenue sources for the agency.
Okay.
Didn't the attorney's letter point all this stuff out? Gary Reagan in his letter?
They didn't talk about that section.
No, I mean not the debt service section or this section here.
That section's from the joint powers agreement.
Right, but did Gary talk about that?
Gary didn't talk about that because they were looking specifically at just providing the services outside of the service area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right.
We're looking at
really got into that.
Yeah. So Commissioner Sullivan, what the other agreement you're talking about is an agreement that was prepared by the CMSA Bond Council prior to the CMSA board authorizing issuance of the 2006 revenue bonds, and that agreement went to each individual board and was approved, essentially.
Right.
And that had to happen before CMSA issued the bonds. And that agreement is separate from the JPA. It's a separate debt service agreement that all the agencies and CMSA entered into pursuant to issuing the bonds and repayments, for the debt service and coverage and other requirements of the rate covenant.
So
this is specific only to the operating fund.
Your interpretation that those are two different...
They are separate documents.
Well, I know they're separate documents, but your impression is that they determine how things will be done separately for this agency.
Yeah, the payment agreement is only for debt service, and that's very specifically says that the debt service is allocated based on EDUs. That's the only option for debt service. Now, the operating fund for operating the agency and all our capital work, those procedures are within the JPA. This procedure right here is the way we implement the JPA procedure, not the debt service. So we can't change that way of allocating debt service unless each of the agencies amends that separate agreement. So this is just for the operating fund.
If you step back from it for a minute, once the debt service is paid off, the agency is left with the operating agreement. No more debt. No more separate allocation to any agency.
No, that's
is true.
Yeah, no, that's valid.
Okay,
but
we're just going to step back. Then what does the agency have to adhere itself to bill the member agencies for future operating costs?
Well,
the JPA agreement.
Yeah, if the language says that you can do one or the other, and your bond agreement says you will do EDUs, then you have to decide whether doing one or the other is consistent with doing what your bond agreement is, which is specifically EDUs. That's just stepping back. Now, you'll probably have several votes that are 4-2 that say, hey, it doesn't matter because we can do anything we want. But I suggest that that's another issue that has kind of slippery legal slopes attached to it, and you need to be really careful how you do that.
They're two separate bills.
But there's one agency with one controlling document.
Yeah. But when one.
No, it isn't one controlling document.
It's
you
two
have
separate controlling
you
documents.
You have two controlling documents. One pertains to the bond, and one pertains to the operating manual for the agency on into the future.
So like, say this board decides we're going to go with, say 5 years from now, they say we're going to go with the volume quality approach, and that decision's made for the operating side. We're still going to have to ask for the EDU information from each district separately so that way we can allocate for the debt service. We'll always need that information.
Okay. So we have a disagreement.
Yeah.
Any other comments? Anybody from the public wish to speak on this item? Have a comment on it? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. This is a... We need a vote for the approval of the volume quality regional charge allocation procedure as presented.
Can I ask a question first?
Sure.
So in the approval of this, in selecting the three-year average flow, we implemented immediately.
We're on the item. The procedure.
We're still on six.
But it does have 36 months in it.
Sorry. Okay, but we're not yet putting it into the budget plan. At this point, it's a procedure that we're adopting.
Yeah, this is just a procedure that we integrated in our policy. So the policy has procedures to implement the three methods that are in the agreement. Yeah. The JPA agreement, not the debt service agreement.
I would move approval.
Second. Okay, I have a motion and a second to approve, the approval of the procedure for the volume quality regional charge allocation. Any other comments? Okay, comments are noted. I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Okay. Next up is item number 7, fiscal year 12-13 regional charge allocation.
Yeah, so staff is currently developing the agency's fiscal year 13 budget, and we're revising the 10-year financial forecast. And with these three adopted procedures now, staff is looking for board, selection and direction on which of these allocation methods to use for the agency's fiscal year 13 revenue budget. Now, this item was brought to the board's finance committee, and as I mentioned, note here in the staff report, what they think are the appropriate methods are either the flow and quality based method or the 3-year average method. Now, the agency only has 1 month worth of strength or quality data. So the percentages that are shown on page 2 assume that average BOD and TSS, which make up the quality components as we define it in this procedure, that average is consistent for the whole year. So the finance committee thought, well, it's probably appropriate for the staff to collect the strength data for the remaining part of the year and the board to consider the volume and strength method next year for development of the fiscal year 14 budget. But for this current fiscal year, 12-13, that the board considers selecting the 3-year flow average. Now, page 2 of the staff report shows the allocation percentages to each collection system agency. So the first 3 are JPA member agencies, and the 4th is San Quentin, another collection agency. So the first row there is what we had in our fiscal year 12 budget that was adopted by the board. That was the allocation based on the fiscal year 11 actual EDUs that were in our budget. Now, we've received the fiscal year 12 actual EDU information from each member agency. Our staff has reviewed those documents, and we verified everything. So the second item would be the EDU method for fiscal year 13 and what the allocation percentages are. So you see we have increases in the three member agencies, and then there's a significant decrease in San Quentin State Prison, and that's due to the reduction of their EDU count, which were what we've talked about several times in the past. Then you have the four allocation procedures. The two are the flow-based, 1 year, 3 year average, and how the percentages change based on that data that we measure. And the last two are the volume and strength information, either using annual flow or 3 year flow, and how the percentages change. So you see, really, from the flow and strength, that the percentages are all relatively pretty close to each other. Some slight increases for some districts, some slight decreases. And then, as Commissioner Hartzell was referencing, here is Section 14 of the JPA, with the which I color-coded. And essentially, it says that the yellow section says revenues for the operating fund of the agency, which we call the regional charge. They're charged to each member by CMSA, and the members agree to pay it. Very, very clear. Then there's the pink line sentence that says that it could be based on, the regional charge could be based on volume and quality. And that's continuously measured by our flow meters that we talked about. The green sentence says the quality is really, you know, cannot be considered or considered, but the board has the option of not considering it. So that would give you the flow option. The board did consider the quality. And then the last sentence, which isn't, you know, color-coded, was an amendment to the JPA back in the early 1980s, which allowed the dwelling units, you know, addition for allocating the regional charge. Then you see item B in the JPA says that the members are responsible for deriving the revenue to pay the regional charges as established by this board. So that's just, you know, what's in the JPA. So the Finance Committee is recommending that for fiscal year 13, that the agency's revenue budget be allocated based on the three-year flow average. So that's just a board discussion and direction to staff. And whatever the board decides, we'll incorporate into the revenue budget and bring it back at the May board meeting as a component of the draft budget.
Colin? I have a question.
The strength factor, does that include saltwater intrusion?
The strength measures total suspended solids and biological oxygen demand. That's what it measures. Now, you know, quality is not defined in the JPA. So quality could be various things. I mean, if the board decided, quality could be solids, it could be organics, it could be ammonia, it could be any constituent that we could measure, or it could be combinations. We define quality in the procedure the board has approved just on the solids and the organics, which traditionally is what you identify to be quality. But it could be many things.
I guess it's a little off topic. I'm trying to keep it on the same topic, but what I'm trying to figure out is, you know, so I guess saltwater intrusion isn't part of this.
Saltwater does not contribute suspended solids, mm-hmm. and it doesn't contribute organics. What it does contribute is dissolved solids and salt. And salt generally isn't removed through the treatment process. As we talked about in the past, we'd have to have a system similar to what MMWD proposed for the desalination plant, mm-hmm. some type of reverse osmosis mm-hmm. or thermal process to remove, you know, the salt from the water.
Any other comments?
Oh, I thought it was coincidental that everybody else's rate went up or down a little bit, and ours went up almost 22% under this. New approximation. 49.4 over 40.6 is a 21.7 increase. And I need to point out to Commissioner Hartzell that applies to Larkspur rates as well.
Could we have the rationale for proposing three-year averaging, one-year flow, et cetera, was to try to kind of rectify a situation where there could be just variability kind of at, without any understanding of it, of EDU changes. Have a sounder relating to the constituents of the product that is delivered here as it relates to the needs of a treatment facility, relating it more directly. With regard to anticipating EDUs being as problematic as they have been in the past, what would you say how would you anticipate looking forward on something like that? I mean, we had a once in a whatever blue moon, worse than blue moon situation that arose, whereby you know, we got kind of surprised and confused by what was being delivered to us in the way of estimates. We look for alternatives. What, going forward, what would be the significant arguments for continuing with the concept of changing it to flow as opposed to writing out the
Well, you know, I think, you know, from a staff perspective, that we can allocate the charge based on any method the board selects. And, you know, we'll do whatever the board wants to in terms of allocating the charge. But in terms of EDUs, EDUs are determined by the members and they're given to us. We have no control over determining the EDUs. We're not part of the process in calculating the EDUs. And as we, you know, as you mentioned, this last year there was EDU changes and CMSA wasn't privy for months. What was the basis for those EDU changes, which led us into some of the challenges we have right now? Moving to flow or flow and strength, you know, from a board perspective, two benefits to that could be that now this agency, which has to determine our revenue needs and our charges, that we're measuring this information. So we're in control of the information and gathering it, and we'll provide that to anybody upon request immediately. Also, if you look at, you know, the basic cost of service principles as kind of defined and described in the regional charge alternative study and in the presentation of the board, is that to be fair to each of the districts, they should be charged based on how much water they send us for treatment and how much material is in that water for removal and processing and disposal and handling. The EDU method doesn't have a clear correlation between true cost of service and what's being sent to us. It's more convenient.
And there's no relationship necessarily between EDU of the three delivering agencies?
I'm not familiar with how each defines their
right.
own
I mean, it might be very different from first year to years, right?
Well, for EDUs?
Yeah.
I mean, this whole thing arose from the change in strength factor. San Quentin was discussed. It was discussed for a long time, but the numbers didn't get communicated properly, it sounds like. But
yeah, we didn't receive any information for about 4 months that was the basis for it.
But it was clearly, as I agree with you, a one-time event. So we're making a long-term, relatively expensive for Larkspur and Ross Valley change on the basis of a one-time event.
Commissioner Phillips?
I'd just like to suggest there are two ways of looking at this. It strikes me that at the previous meeting, we decided that a better measure of operating costs was processing materials that are delivered. So that's the first thing. If you then look at that and look at the schedule, perhaps rather than concluding your charge went up by 20%, 40 over 10, let's call it, you might conclude, if you were from San Rafael, that we've been overcharged when using that measurement for processing.
Okay, I'd like to just add something here. I find it kind of ironic that your agency is going to a flow-based measurement to your constituents, telling them, look, we'll charge you a flat fee plus whatever you flow into the system, because some EDU units are higher than the others, rather than just having a flat fee for everybody. And yet, when we go to flow, somehow that's unjust. I mean, to me, it's like, you know, you're taking the same data or the same concept back to your agency and integrating it into your future cost allocation to the resident. And yet, somehow, we have to stay with the old allocation of EDUs, which can be can fluctuate because of a business going or a building being torn down and no longer being an equivalent dwelling unit or any other changes. So I just think that, you know, flow is a great measure of you know, what this agency is going to do to treat the effluent that comes to us. And so, I mean, if it's good for your agency, I don't see why it can't be good for CMSA.
Well, I agree with you to some extent. It's good for our agency in that we've been threatened with multiple lawsuits for not going to a flow-based system, and that something like a third of the agencies in California are going to some modification of the flow-based system. So flow is going to come, and there's no question about it. It's just
interesting that Gary suggested that we've been underpaying so much for so long, according to this document, which was hard for me to believe.
No, numbers are numbers, and Gary and I know numbers. So, anyway, anybody else have any comments? Anybody from the public have a comment on this item? Wish to discuss it? Give us some insight? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back. Mm-hmm. Any further discussion? Do I have a motion to consider the three-year average flow regional charge allocation method for fiscal year 2012-2013?
So moved.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Okay, I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
No.
No.
Motion fails.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Okay. Do you have a second motion?
I'd like to move that we stick with the EDU for at least one more year as we look at the continue to collect data on flow and strength and look at steps being taken to that we continue for at least one more year on the method that we've been using at this time.
Jason, at this time, do we have any idea what our new EDU counts are going to be? Because our current policy is to take the prior year's numbers.
It's to take the actual, so we have the actual data. So this fiscal year 13 information here, that's using the actual information that we've received and verified.
That all came in last month, I think. I saw it moved. So.
So I made a motion. There's no second.
Well, just I want to get some clarification here because this to me I think this allocation method. Maybe I'm wrong on this, but I don't think we're gonna. Are we gonna use San Quentin's EDU or are we gonna use a different measurement for them?
If CMSA contracts with San Quentin, which has not happened yet, then we would receive a certain revenue from San Quentin, which right now, in this final draft agreement that's before the board for review and comment, is a flat fee each month. So what would happen is the allocation percentages here would change, but the net revenue, which is applied to, which these percentages are applied to, would decrease. So the amount that each agency would be paying CMSA, if CMSA contracted directly with corrections, would be the percentage would be higher, but the amount of money would be less. This table is simply, a update of the table that was in that alternative study, and is presented in this manner because we haven't contracted with San Quentin yet. But the percentage, all the percentages would increase, but our revenue, net revenues would decrease, so the amount that each would contribute to us would decrease, even though they had a higher percentage allocation as compared to last year.
Okay, and that makes sense. My second question is, if we do nothing, if we get another 3-3 vote, what does the agency end up doing? Since we don't have a three-year average flow, then we go back to what we did last year?
I would think that we would just continue using the EDU method. Because that's what we
it's already there.
Been using, and that's that's the only direction we have is what prior direction is using EDU, and we just continue using that, I guess, until we got different direction from the majority of the board.
I'd love to have some more data. We've gotten like 1 month worth of strength data so far
during heavy rain.
During heavy rain.
Well, we weren't going
with strength. That proposal wasn't strength.
No, but I mean, before we change as an agency on a one-time event, I'd like to have more data to drive it.
Okay, I have a motion to continue with the EDU counts for one more year.
I'll second.
And a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
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 I don't have enough data in front of me to make that recommendation.
So it fails.
So, okay, so we move on to number 8.
Well,
yes.
I mean, the way I look at this thing, out of the blue, we had a huge drop in EDUs this year. We weren't told about it until we asked and asked and asked. And I don't know if we're ever satisfied with what we got. 6 years ago, they went up arbitrarily. We asked, we did a public records request, we asked all the reasons why that happened. Amazingly, there was nothing there that could be shared with us or justify how an agency raised its rates to the extent they did 6 years ago. And quite frankly, I look at the flow and I forget the strengths and say, what comes in is what we have to process. It's a simple thing. We measure it. And what you pump in here, you pay and get processed. And 2 months ago when I was here, I made the comment based on what's happening with the shift in the debt payment that Santa Fe was going to be affected greatly by that. And the comment from representative sitting where Mr. Solomon's sitting said, well, if you've had a free ride all this time, it's about time you start paying more. So, you know, I'm looking for the truest way to justify the rates that this agency charges its members. And so we're going to have to come up with something. But I don't think by default we should go to EDUs. And you made a good point, Mr. Chair, when you said that Ross Valley is looking at flow to charge their own people. And what's wrong with this agency following through on that? So, I mean, we know there are issues out there. We know that the rates are shifting. But there's some other discussions we've had when we look at the ballot measures going out and all that puts the blame of the need for more money on this agency. When the last time they went for a ballot measure, the rates went up $5. So, you know, I just think that I think flow is the way to go. I think it's fair. It certainly can be verified. We can have people from each agency in here monitoring the flow counts as they're done, attesting to their validity. And it will just take all the arbitrary determination of how charges are made. So,
well, the reason that I stepped away from the change that I've been supporting is it has a couple of parts. One is that I spent some time with a couple of members, not the whole council, and chatted about this. But and came away thinking that staying the same way one more year is not going to make or break an agency. It's the game that we've been playing all along. So here we are. We're going to do it the same way another time. It doesn't preclude using all this analysis, all this computation and so forth and so on. But the reality is that flow alone, if you're talking about what the plant has to do, flow alone isn't the only thing, because the process is here as the, maybe it's a crude weighting system from the 70s, but the processes vary. Some of the processes cost more because of flow, others cost more because of BOD, others cost more because of suspended solids. We don't exactly know where that is right now in terms of that breakdown. As we said, you know, we could learn more about that by having some analysis of how our systems work. But I feel, I realized as I'm going through this a second and third time, that to switch to one more method just because we got flummoxed by the system that's been going on all along, and one method that is by itself not complete because it doesn't have BOD, suspended solids, et cetera, in it, is not necessarily a high-quality change to make. And so I'm also looking for not causing more friction at this time when we're going into mediation and we're trying to solve a few things. And so that's why I made the decision not to go this very year ahead with the change.
And if I might ask them, would you have this information next year at this time that will allow you to make a decision that may be different than tonight?
Perhaps it would have to do with the rest of the analysis. You know, the other factors that go in there.
Well,
also will have some things behind us, presumably.
Well, currently, EDU does not factor in biosolids or TSS. It doesn't factor that in.
Well, it does to some degree.
No, because it's just these are the units.
No, but
this is the cost. It has nothing to do with higher biosolids or higher TSS came in from a different agency.
Well, they assign different the three agencies assign a different EDU value based upon the nature of the agency. That's where we got into all the stuff with San Quentin. But a dry cleaner has one, a laundromat might have another, a restaurant might have another. It's not, I mean, the only thing that's consistent is residence to residence.
Yeah, and even that isn't, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, it isn't really consistent, but the EDU is consistent.
Yeah, well, we basically have a push. We don't have any agreement on going to a flow base, and we don't have any agreement going through, and we're just stuck with the old EDU count, so... You know, I think for sake of the meeting, let's just move on, and there's nothing we can do to change that.
Well, since we're building a list for the arbitration that's going forward, I think this issue ought to go to arbitration.
I agree with that. Yeah. Can we put that on your list, please? Next up, item number 8, selection of an independent auditor.
Okay, last year around... early May, we met with the Finance Committee, and we briefed the committee on a financial policy that the agency has called Internal Controls Fraud Prevention. There's a section within that policy that states that the board will select, independent financial auditors based on periodic recommendations from the general manager after evaluation process. So staff back in May proposed to the committee that we develop a request for a proposal document for the fiscal year 12 auditing services, and that we receive proposals from auditing firms and we evaluate those, and that we'll propose a selection of a new auditor to the board, to the committee on the board. The committee thought that was a fine proposal. We briefed the board on that at the May 2011 board meeting, and that got integrated into the agency's work plan for this year and our finance group's work plan. So at the end of calendar year 2011, the RFP document was prepared. It was posted on the agency's website. Our finance staff, corresponded with, the finance staff, various other wastewater agencies to the Greater Bay Area, got a pretty comprehensive list of auditing firms that have worked with those other agencies. So we sent them a notice informing them that this RFP is going to be developed and placed on the website. We received 9 proposals from auditing firms to audit the fiscal year 12 to 14 financial statements of the agency. And after an evaluation process, our selection committee has proposed Chabon and Associates as the certified public accountants independent to audit the agency's financial statements for the next few years. And we, at that finance committee meeting last week, we had a more of a detailed discussion with the finance committee. And finance manager Hank Chen kind of reviewed the RFP development process, the evaluation process, and our recommendation to select Chabon Associates. And the committee concurred with staff. So we're looking for board approval to select Chabon Associates for the next few years to audit the agency's financial statements.
Questions?
No.
I wasn't here in May, and I'm sorry for my ignorance, but how long did the previous group, I can never pronounce that, Varnik?
Varnik Trinity.
Varnik Trinity. Yeah. Were they like 3 years too?
Oh, no, they were probably around 10 years plus.
Oh, they were.
We were looking at considering going through this same type of process back in 2006, but we were going through the process to issue the revenue bonds, and we got a lot of consultation and advice from Vavrin Trine today, so we figured let's keep working with them for a few more years so we can get the accounting for the bond reporting and everything done properly.
It seemed to me that we discussed this in one of the few meetings that I attended where we agreed that we were going to, maybe it was on my own agency, we're going to try and do every 3 or 4 years.
Well, that's what I mentioned. That's what Larkspur does.
That's what you, maybe I heard.
3 or 4.
know, we don't have a specified time period, but, you know.
But this is for 3 years, and then.
This is for 3 years, and potential two-year administrative extensions.
Five.
Yeah, so up to five. Okay. So we'll reevaluate, and we'll also talk with Siobhan and Associates about, you know, termination provisions. So after the first year, if there's complications, or, you know, we just don't get along, or there's disputes or whatever, that we can terminate, you know, the agreement and go through another selection process.
Are you done?
Yeah. Commissioner Phil. I'm not familiar with this firm. I'm just curious where they're located.
I believe it's San Jose. Is that right, Hank?
San Jose, California.
As opposed to Costa Rica.
Yeah. I'm going to go in favor of the recommendation, but I'm looking at the price and knowing a little bit about this. And if they're coming from San Jose, I would have some concern.
Well, tell them.
Only because you've got travel time, et cetera.
Well, the other ones came from Pleasanton. So.
I'm not making reference to San Jose, but rather distance. Either distance or they're going to have to house the people. But I assume that I'm going to make the assumption that you've gone through the process. Yeah, in making their selection.
Yeah, our staff has talked with them about that. I guess they do a lot of remote work and internet-based work. And so, Hank, do you have anything to add to that from your discussions with Siobhan?
Well, they bring a mobile home in, and they just set up shop out there.
Perfect. About 3 years.
Easy access to sewer.
You serious about that?
No.
No.
I thought it was clever, but it'd be useful.
Good idea.
Yeah. You can borrow it.
They need a permit over here at the extended stay. Any other comments on
how does this cost compare to the past cost?
So this is $16,000 a year. I believe that we had in our budget 17 to 18 for VTD to audit the financials. We had a little more in there. These are providing advice on other types of auditing work. Is that correct, Hank?
Their most recent audit that they completed for us was $3,000.
Move to approve.
Okay, we'll wait. Hold on. Anyone from the public wishing to speak on this item? Okay, seeing none.
Second.
Got a motion and a second to approve Charbonneau and Associates. Is there anyone?
Siobhan.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Next up is item number 9, informational item regarding the fiscal year 11-12 debt service coverage ratio.
So I briefed the board at the February board meeting that we had recalculated the fiscal year 12 debt service coverage ratio for the agency, and it was less than the rate covenant's 1.25 requirement. And we informed the board at that time that that we would work with the bond counsel and our financial advisor to look at some potential opportunities to look at the way we calculate the coverage ratio and other things that are in the master indenture to where we could hopefully increase the coverage ratio and look at for any other types of activities that the board could consider. So we recently met with bond counsel, which is Sean Tierney with Hawkins Delafield Woodhouse, San Francisco, and with financial advisor, and that's Sarah Hollenbeck with Public Financial Management a couple weeks ago, and we developed this kind of five-point action plan that I briefly summarized here in the staff report. And we reviewed this action plan with the Finance Committee last week, and they were in agreement that staff would implement the first three items on the action plan, and they would then, if we didn't meet the coverage ratio after those three items were in effect, then we'd bring back, you know, items for the board to consider, which would be the do nothing alternative, four actions, four and five. So just briefly to summarize, the first action is that we would work with a financial consultant, and we would take a look at how we do the specific, you know, coverage ratio calculations and look for any opportunities where we could recharacterize an operating expense as a capital expense. And one idea that we talked about with the financial advisor bond counsel, which made sense to them, was that currently right now we charge staff salary and benefit costs when they're working on any of the major capital projects. And those costs are paid for by the bond proceeds. But we've been considering those an operating expense in prior coverage ratio calculations. Bond counsel said, well, really, you could capitalize those and move those out of the operating expense category. And I think this year we have about $300,000 budgeted for staff salary and benefits to work on capital projects. But I think we're going to be probably a little lower than that. So we're going to work with a consultant, look at some of these opportunities, and once we identify those and revise the calculations, then we'll do item two, which is we'll just recalculate the coverage ratio with the capitalization of some of these items or any other refinements to the calculations. If we're below 1.25 after that exercise, then we'll work on item three, and this is establishing a rate stabilization fund for this current bond year, fiscal year 12. And this establishment of this fund is authorized in the master indenture of the bond documents. And essentially the way it works is we will look at the coverage ratio for fiscal year 11, which is about 1.31. So that difference from 1.25, the minimum requirement in the covenant, to the 1.31 translates to about, I have here, $350,000. So on an accounting basis, we can show that money for this fiscal year in a rate stabilization fund. So when we do that coverage ratio calculation, that money could be considered, you know, another revenue source. Then net revenues increase, and the coverage ratio would increase for this current year. But we couldn't use those monies in future years. It's only this one-time event. So after we implement that, if we're still below 1.25, and some preliminary figures we looked at, we probably wouldn't be. But if we were, then we'd come back to the board with a report on that, and we would show three other options, 4, 5, and 6. Now, 4 is something that the bond council, you know, brainstormed at our meeting, and he has since talked with the tax attorney in his firm's office, who said that we could probably do this. And this is where we would use the bond proceeds to pay for the March interest payment of the debt service. And by paying for that with the bond proceeds, we could capitalize that interest payment. Therefore, it wouldn't be considered part of the operating expenses. In other words, he also said that you would have your debt service payment would be lower because that incremental element of the interest payment would be capitalized or removed from it, so our ratio would be higher. That's something that we'd have to explore further with him after the first three items are implemented. The next one is that we invoice the JPA member agencies for any coverage shortfall. For instance, if there was, we went through items 1, 2, and 3, say there was a $100,000 shortfall that we needed in terms of revenue to bring up the coverage ratio 1.25, this board could consider invoicing the member agencies for that amount based on their actual fiscal year 12 reported EDUs to make the agency whole, so we met that rate cut requirement. And this 2006 payment for treatment services agreement that Commissioner Sullivan referenced a little while ago, that says that the member agencies agree to derive the revenues to pay the debt service, their proportionate share of the debt service payment, and any other funds for CMSA to meet the requirements of the rate covenant. Then the last option would be if, say, our coverage ratio was 1.23 or 1.24, the board could consider just not taking any action. And the only downside to that would be that if the agency looked at issuing debt in the future, we would have to disclose that. And, you know, the lenders or the rating agencies or the insurers or the investors, they would look at, you know, several years, prior 5 years where we met the ratio, then we have this anomaly this year driven by the EDU count reduction and the operating revenue, you know, a shortfall, and then hopefully, you know, meeting coverage the next several years. And maybe they wouldn't consider that to be significant and it wouldn't impact our rates, although it could. So after, you know, implementing the first three, I'll leave, if things look good, I'll come back as a verbal report and tell you everything's fine for this fiscal year. If not, then we'll have those three options for the board to consider. That could be as early as the May meeting or the latest, I think, the June board meeting. So this is just an informational item to let you know that we followed up on this. We've had a lot of discussions about it. And if we don't meet the coverage and we need to come back to the board with these options, I'll invite the bond council in to be able to provide you a little more detailed information relating to, you know, capitalization of the interest payments and so forth.
Commissioner Sullivan?
Yeah, just pardon my ignorance. What happens to the amount that's over the 100% that's needed for the debt coverage? So like 1.5, 1.3, 1.4. What happens to that money? Is that, I mean, in theory, that's not debt money that we at Ross Valley have sent in that's above and beyond the one. And we pay what the debt is. So it's money that's in the operating budget that we then use as a statistical thing.
It's a combination of various revenues. So it's going to be all of our revenues on the operating side.
Right.
It's going to be the revenues on the debt service side, and then all the member agencies, they also pay a 1.25 coverage of the debt service piece. So when we invoice the member agencies, in aggregate, we receive enough to pay the bondholders and 25% more. And that was by design back in 2006 because we had that rate covenant requirement. But what happened this year is even though we've received 125% from the member agencies, we have a $730,000 shortfall on the operating side, which then, in effect, lowers the net revenues.
Oh, okay, so I think I understand it better. So we do pay 125% of what the debt
of,
is.
Of
and
the
that every year that accumulates. So in 30 years, that would be seven times the actual.
It'd be 1.1 million times.
Yeah.
And what we did is at CMSA, we designed that intentionally. That way, we had a perfectly balanced budget that we would have that additional 25% coming in for debt service coverage, so we'd meet the rate covenant, and that 1.1 million is allocated to be held in a restricted capital reserve account only for capital work. So part of the capital 10-year capital plan we have now, those $1.1 million are used as a revenue source to partially fund that 10-year capital plan. And I'll show that, you know, in this PowerPoint presentation in a minute.
Okay, but in theory then, you know, over a couple of years, we got $5-6 million in there. You could use that money. I mean, it doesn't make sense every year to have to meet the 1.25.
I mean, I know that's what we thought that too when we had that rate cut requirement. That's the way it works.
I mean, from a conceptual standpoint, a bonding agency wants to make sure that you can pay them back.
That's right.
So that's why they want to make sure that this year you have enough money to pay them back. They don't care what you did 3 years ago with the, you know, the extra $1 million or whatever. I mean, that million belongs to the people that are paying the bond off, in theory. I mean, it belongs to the citizens of Santa Ravel and Corte Madera. And, you know, I mean, so if it's in a capital account, it should be able to be given back so that this never happens. I mean, three doesn't have to be a one-year thing. It can be a standing fund. Make sure that we never have a problem with our bond.
If we receive enough revenue beyond 1.25 and we need to set up the stabilization fund, we can look at the prior year's revenue. Anything greater than that, we can put in that fund. This coverage, we have to, you know, invoice for that. That was built into our debt service rate. You know, our EDU rate that you're familiar with, $275 per EDU, that has a debt service piece and that has an operating piece. The debt service piece was set back in 2006, and all the members went through the Prop 218 process to include that into their own rates. And that was all by design, so that way we had always received that 25% coverage. And this was talked about back in 2006 when we were designing this payment agreement. Because as staff, we had a hard time conceptually understanding that too. If we have to receive 25% coverage every year, what do? With all that extra money, and the bond council said, well, he suggested we use it for capital. So that way, on your operating side, you're not having to increase your rate as much, because on the debt service side, you're bringing in this coverage, which you can dedicate for capital. So what we do is we put that in a restricted reserve account that the board set up in one of their financial policies. And it's all worked out for us.
And what you're saying is that per the requirements, the contract, the accumulation cannot be applied towards future debt service, except for 1 year's worth.
That's right. The coverage monies, once we receive that, that's considered for coverage calculations that year. but those monies are dedicated for capital then, established by this board. We can't use those monies for paying the bondholders in the future because we've already increased our rate to collect the 25% extra, and all member agencies have integrated that into their rate, and they've noticed their property owners and so forth. And we've had, you know, multiple discussions in the past about, you know, if we have extra bond proceeds, can we give those back to member agencies? Can we have the coverage? Can we give them back to member agencies so they can use on their projects? And we received various opinions from the bond council that will soon, as CMSA collects the money, it's all CMSA's bond proceeds, and it has to, well, but we have to use that for the debt service payments, hold the coverage. Each year has to be 1.25. We've been able to show that. And then the rest can be used for capital.
Okay, Commissioner Wong.
So when I look at page 78 of your CAFR, your last CAFR, of an 83-page document, I see a debt service coverage ratio in 2007 of 2.62. In 2008, the same debt service coverage of 2.44.
Where are you reading from? Can we have a copy of that?
Oh, well, all I have is my notes here. But
could you?
This is page... I'd like to finish that.
Yeah, just...
I'm just kind of curious. It's, well, a lot of those all those numbers are above 1.25. So
that's correct.
Kind of curious. All that overage is in your reserve account for capital programs. I mean, your restricted reserves.
Does it work something like this?
I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, I know.
Anything we collect from a member above 1.25. We collect 1.25 from the member agencies. That's what we collect. And that 0.25, it goes into a restricted capital reserve account. Any those numbers there you're referring to, that was that for that particular year, we had so many revenues that we received, we had so many operating expenses, and when you do the calculation, that's what the coverage ratio was.
So there was a shortfall somewhere, and we needed to be able to...
The shortfall was this
year.
We didn't
pay principal off for 2 years.
Well, I see that. Yeah. I see that.
Yeah. I mean, that's not, that was the difference.
And our interest didn't change dramatically each year.
This rate structure that you're referring to, this was selected by the member agencies. Because when we issued the debt, we worked with the financial advisor, and they constructed five different ways that we could raise our rates, you know, in this structure of the revenue bond issuance. And we presented those to the member agencies, and they selected this three-year increase that you're seeing in that CAFR document.
No, it was in the CAFR, which is the...
Jason, when this bond issue goes away, and we paid it off,
that's fine.
And we still have capital improvements that we need to make. We're going to request it from each. We're going to request a portion of that capital improvement cost for the future from each member agency, right?
I mean, yeah, it's integrated into operating budgets.
Yeah, it'll be in the operating budget.
Yeah,
but right now. If I'm getting, I don't know if I can do these numbers right in my head. If we're getting 125 for debt service, 100 goes to debt service.
That's right.
And 25 goes into capital.
Restricted capital reserve accounts. That's right.
Then it just means that there's less money coming in from the operating account. For capital.
That's correct.
So when the debt service goes away, I'll have to get 125 from operating or whatever it is, because I got to pay operating costs plus, you know, some sort of set aside amount for capital improvement.
Yeah, whatever the structure is to bring in enough revenue to pay for the future capital.
Right.
Yeah.
To instead of doing this pay as you go system where, ooh, we need a new generator, and now all the member agencies get billed, you know, one-time shot.
Yeah, what we do is, you know, since we have this capital plan, we try to, every year we revise it, and we look into the future based on condition assessments of equipment, and we try to identify what type of, you know, repair, replacement, rehabilitation do we need to include in some outer year based on the assessment this year. And every year we revise that, you know, things either get moved forward based on condition or they get pushed out. So it's a developing process.
But what
we avoid doing is, say we have to, like a big ticket item here is a cogeneration system. You know, that may be $4 million to replace it. We'd want to start accumulating money years in the future a small amount to put into the reserve fund, so we have the funds there to pay for this, instead of in 1 year going to members and saying, hey, we have this $4 million capital item and we need to increase our revenue needs by this amount.
So whether we
just plan it out.
Okay, so but whether we do it through the debt service or we put it into the operating, we still have to collect it from the member agencies. And it's not just like there's some big pot there that member agencies have contributed to that's going to go nowhere, right?
Well, it sounds like it's called a reserve fund or something like that.
It's
and eventually it's taken and put into capital fund.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're right. If 20 years from now or whatever, when it goes away, there's going to be $1 million hole in the budget. And it's going to have to be made up in other...
From the operator.
Right. But the bond payment that's coming from all the agencies will be zero. So there'll be...
It'll just be the 0.25.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
No, that point two money five will drop down into.
I mean, if you just think of it as a constant, that 0.25 will not drop down into the operating,
right?
Because we're going to have to get it to pay for future capital improvement. So
none of us are going to be here when this bond is paid.
To me, it's just not like the bond. We're not collecting more from the bond.
So
that bond issuers.
You won't care.
All right. Any other comments?
This information is related to what we're going to be able with the first three, and if we need to, we'll come back at a future meeting with the other actions for consideration.
Any other comments from the commissioners? Any other comments from the public? Okay, seeing none. All right, then we'll just move on. Okay. Item number 10. This is the interim wastewater agreement with CDC.
Thank you, Chair. So about a year ago, well, it was 1 year ago, we received a letter from Mr. Mike Martell, the then warden at San Quentin State Prison. And he had learned that it appeared that Ross Valley was overbilling them to maintain and operate their pump station. So he asked the CMSA board if our staff could prepare a proposal to operate and maintain part of the pump station, the equipment side that Ross Valley was maintaining. And then that came to the board. The board authorized us to prepare that proposal and deliver it to San Quentin. So we went out there, we visited the station, did condition assessments, we developed a proposal. And while we were there, they also asked for a proposal on the wet side of the pump station, or wet well. We delivered that in the May time frame. San Quentin, we had subsequent discussions. They eventually gave that to the Department of Corrections. And in September, the Department of Corrections requested what they call a comprehensive wastewater service proposal from CMSA for wastewater treatment and to operate and maintain the whole pump station. That came to the board, and the board authorized staff to prepare that proposal. So we did that, delivered it to Corrections, met with them, gave them a tour of the agency, and so forth. And we reported that to the board. And in December, the Department of Corrections sent Ross Valley Sand District a letter of their notice of intent to terminate their agreement with Ross Valley. So we reported that to the board in December. In February, Department of Corrections sent a letter, and they requested that CMSA staff work collaboratively with corrections staff to develop a one-year, what they call interim wastewater service agreement, where we would operate and maintain that pump station and provide the wastewater treatment and disposal services, with the intent that during that year that we would develop a more comprehensive multi-year agreement. So the board authorized staff to prepare that interim wastewater agreement. So what's attached to the staff report is a letter to Ross Valley dated March 22nd, where Department of Corrections has terminated their agreement effective June 30th. Also attached to that is the beginning of the agreement. This is a California Department of General Services standard agreement form that's been prepared. And then its attachments are the interim wastewater agreement with a couple exhibits. So this agreement's in final draft form. It's been reviewed by legal counsel Govey, approved the form. His comments have been incorporated into it. It's been approved by the legal team up at Corrections. Our operation and maintenance staff have reviewed it in terms of the scope of work, making sure that's accurate and doable. Their comments have been incorporated. then, you know, management staff here and corrections have also reviewed this document. So it's in final draft state. The procedural detail is that the agreement needs to go to, well, has went to Department of Corrections for their review and comment, and that should be completed in the near future. So I'm just bringing the final draft agreement to the board to see if you have any comments or discussion, and then any direction to staff to incorporate any other agreements. This document is pretty comprehensive. It's more comprehensive than we envisioned with corrections when we set out to draft this after board approval. In terms of the scope work, is pretty detailed. There's emergency services provision, sewer overflow reporting provisions. There's extra services, which is a request of corrections. And the flat fee for CMSA would be $100,000 per month, so $1.2 million for fiscal year 13, which is about $350,000 more than we are receiving from Ross Valley for wastewater treatment right now. So in effect, on the wastewater treatment side, each of the member agencies, their treatment costs would be slightly decreased with CMSA entering into this agreement with Department of Corrections. So this is just, I figured I'd provide to the board for any comments that you all have on the terms and conditions in the agreement. And if there's board concurrence on any comments, I can draft those up and forward them to corrections for their review and forwarding to Department of General Services. But the intent would be to have the final agreement before the board at the May or the June meeting, so that way we're in place and have an agreement on July 1st when they'd be expecting for the beginning of treatment under the new agreement.
Comments by the board? I have one, Jason. Have we done an inspection of the pipe? Do we know the condition of it?
Which pipe?
The pipe between CMSA and
No, that'd be, you know, that is something that is outside the scope of just developing this agreement. And that'd be something that would be an extra service that corrections could ask for, where we would shut down the pump station, we would do a video inspection of that 16-inch force main, and then if it looked as if there needed to be some repair work, it would be part of the multi-year capital improvement program.
Okay. Any other comments?
Yeah, I have a couple comments.
Sure, Sullivan.
Yeah, this whole process is a direct attack on a member agency, the JPA, and I just want that in the record. I think that this is, it's truly unfortunate that an agency that has contracted with Ross Valley for many, many years was that agreement was undermined by CMSA, which we apparently provide 50% of the flow to.
Can I stop you for a minute? Can that just be your opinion? And
sure.
Because I don't think it was a direct attack by this agency.
Okay, I interpret this as a direct attack. I think it's a variance with the JPA on a number of different things, including being out, despite what Mr. Govan said, including being outside the scope of the territory that the JPA serves. I think it's illegal in that fixed fees are not allowed under most state contracts, and it'd be interesting to see if the state signs off on that. I think it's questionable in terms of the basic cost of services principles that all the rest of us have to function under. All of us get charged what is thought to be a reasonable price, depending on EDUs or perhaps in future flow. And that's not how this is being calculated, from what I can tell. And then I'm just worried that this is, I don't know if CMSA is now going to go to some other agency, you know, the new building in Cordillera, and say, well, we would like to provide you direct sewer services, and you don't have to go through Cordillera to get the services. So, yeah, I find it objectionable. That's most of my thoughts.
Okay. Any other comments?
I just want to make sure that I get this. Certainly, CMSA is charging significantly less than, apparently the same service, significantly less, half again is less, what Ross Valley was charging. So that means there are two possibilities. We are either undercharging and therefore I want to make certain that we are charging the appropriate amount. Or Ross Valley, I'll say it, overcharge when compared to our service. I don't know if it's overcharged based on their costs or not, but compared to ours. So I just want to make sure we're clear to the first point, that we're comfortable that we can provide the service at whatever margins are factored into this thing, at the amount bid. Probably a ridiculous question in some ways, because I think your answer is going to be yes, but I want to make sure of that.
Sure, sure. So I can answer one statement that Commissioner Sullivan made, that I can answer your question. The $100,000, the basis for that, is the EDU amount right now that San Quentin has as determined by Ross Valley, 3,200 EDUs. So you use that, you times it by the strength factor that we determined by our 8 weeks or so of measurement back in April and May of last year, and that brings it up to about, you know, $1.1 million for the year. Then there's $100,000 in there. Well, there's $100,000 in there for operating and maintaining the pump station, which, you know, on our end, based on our initial estimates, is a very conservative amount with overhead built into it and a lot of contingency built into the standard preventative maintenance that we would have to perform. Under the agreement, there's another $150,000 in there for extra services. So if they want to do the inspection of the pipeline, like Mr. Clark mentioned, we could coordinate that, and they would pay for that separately. So if we had a consultant help out with that and did an assessment, they would do that. So CMSA is being, there's a basis for the calculation. So we're being made whole in the process, and it's a very conservative estimate on the actual person hours and costs to operate that, maintain and operate that pump station. And anything outside, you know, the basic, you know, preventative maintenance work as kind of outlined in one of these exhibits would be considered extra work and paid for separately by the Department of Corrections, such as if we go out there and we do an assessment of the diesel emergency generator and it's in, say, poor condition, and we tell them, you know, we need to replace this emergency generator for reliability and safety and, you know, to keep the wastewater conveying during a power outage, it's going to cost $700,000. That would be extra work. So they would pay for that procurement of that equipment separately outside of this agreement. So there is a very specific basis on how the numbers were calculated, and there's a lot of conservative estimate there. And CMSA's, you know, our revenue is $300,000 greater than we're receiving from Ross Valley. So I think it keeps our treatment costs a little bit lower to the member agencies.
Make sure I'm comparing apples to apples. Is at one point, it's either 1.2 or 1.25, I don't care about that, but that one of those two numbers compared to 3.8.
I didn't
compared to the previous charge by Ross Valley of 3.8.
Yeah, Ross Valley charged the Department of Corrections $3.8 million in, I believe it was fiscal year 11. Fiscal year 11.
10, probably.
And of that $3.8 million, CMSA received $2.1 million, or about, for wastewater treatment, and Ross Valley received $1.8 million to operate that pump station. Half of the pump station that we're charging, you know, conservatively $100,000 for. And then, you know, Ross Valley lowered the EDU count there based on their own assessment of the strength. So that way, this fiscal year, San Quentin has been invoiced for $2.1 million. We're going to receive around $850,000 for our treatment end, and Ross Valley is going to receive around $1.2 million to operate half of the pump station. And those are just real numbers based on invoices and the work out there.
So we receive $800,000 compared to next year, 1.2 or 1.3.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you.
You mentioned strength factor numbers, the ones that you did. What were the strength factors that you came up with for San Quentin?
1.3.
1.3, and we reported 1.1.
You guys never reported anything, and we never saw any analysis from Ross Valley Sand District in your agenda packets to your boards or anything to corrections.
Essentially,
what we heard was that you guys said it was 1.0, same as the same family residence.
You heard that through the grapevine or something?
You said it. It was in a letter that Brett Richards sent to corrections that you handed out at this meeting in June of last year after our budget was adopted, where he said they had done some testing out there based on 1 month of testing, and that based on that 1 month of testing, that they've determined that the strength factor was the same as a single family residence, 1.0 versus 2.34, and because of that, they're reducing their EDU count and saving the corrections a lot of money. And that played out in December when Ross Valley sent the invoice to San Quentin that was based on an EDU count of 3,200. But we, you know, as one of the board members mentioned a minute ago, we sent a public records request to Ross Valley where we wanted to see what level of analysis was done, one at San Quentin, you know, and one with some single family residents so you could actually make the comparison to derive the 1.0. And we've never received that as part of our PRA. And then we had subsequent discussions at this board with directions to Council Golby to request that from the Ross Valley Council on a few occasions, and nothing was received that showed an actual strength factor calculation. It was just stated it was one in a letter, and that would apply to the invoice. But that's not CMSA business. I'm just telling you what I read in the agenda packets and in the letters that I've seen. But what we issued was 1.3, and that was reported to the CMSA board. I don't know if it was a May meeting or the June meeting after we did 24 composite sampling out there for several weeks.
I'd like to make a follow-up. I think you, Commissioner Guasco, you had stated with certainty that you knew what the number was and you just rounded down. I think those were your words. We rounded down when Jason came up with the 1.3. So
I said we rounded down.
Yes. It's...
Well, you know, we go back to the information I know that I provided to you all, but also I heard a comment regarding force main outfit. Something about inspecting the condition of it.
Well, no, my concern was we will be doing this work for San Quentin, and if there's a break in the pipe or there's some other erosion or degradation of the pipe between here and San Quentin, my concern would be, you know, who's in charge and who fixes it. And it sounds like it's going to be us, and in as much as we haven't done any type of inspection of that type of a pipe, you know, we don't know if it's in 100% shape or 50% shape or 10% shape. So it was just my concern that, you know, when we were looking at this agreement, you know, to protect this agency and protect CMSA and the other member agencies from a major spill or a calamity that could happen with that pipe, is that, you know, somehow that pipe should be reviewed.
I agree.
Okay.
How you go about that would be interesting.
I want to talk to one of the questions Gary asked. There are really a couple issues out there. One, there's a big force main that's going to need to be replaced, and although CMSA maintained parts of it, it actually belongs to Puerto Madera and Ross Valley. And so when that $40 million needs to be done as a capital project, it will be done by Puerto Madera and Ross Valley and Wexford. So that's part of the cost of maintaining the system, and that's part of the reason why when we have a sanitary district, we have two fees. We have a collection and transportation fee, and then we have a processing fee that we pay to Central and Sanitary Agency. The prison has had that fee is broken in half, and although the amount that's going to go to CMSA goes up a little bit, the amount that's going to go to the Ross Valley district is going to go down by $1 million, and that $1 million is going to be paid for by the citizens of Ross Valley and the citizens of Wexford. So, you know, again, it's another cost shifting. That's why I said, in my opinion, it's an attack on a member agency, which I feel is pretty atrocious.
Commissioner Hartzell.
So Ross Valley has a CIP fund for the replacement of that force main built from...
No.
Well, then how can you say that that million that you've been getting all along is going towards the ultimate eventual need to replace that?
Because that million, like all the other fees that are collected by any sanitary agency, including Port of Madera and San Rafael, goes to both the maintenance of the system and to the capital projects in the system. We just put in a huge force main underneath the bike path in Larkspur and sort of close areas. That's a lot of money. That money is exactly the same kind of money that's going to have to be spent to fix the 56 or 54 inch force main that's running.
But isn't that CMSA's problem?
Not if they don't own it. It's owned by Corte Madera and Ross Valley.
Everyone owns that pipe, right?
I don't think so.
In the JPA agreement, it's owned by Ross Valley Sand, Corte Madera, Santu, and City of Larkspur. And in the CMSA agreement, CMSA is granted full use of that pipe, and CMSA is designated to operate and maintain that just a section of the pipe from the connection of the San Quentin Forest Main to CMSA. Everything upstream of that is maintained by Ross Valley.
Okay. You know, I've just heard some comments, and I just can't understand why... You know, when we're looking at equitable distributions of costs, that somehow Ross Valley is being overcharged or undercharged. But it just seems like everything just seems to flow the perfect way for you. You know, you overcharge San Quentin. Now they want to come to us, and we're taking money from you. You know, it's, you know, we're taking the same amount of money from San Quentin, basically, but $350,000. Not
which accounts for the higher strength,
right.
and for our staff time to maintain the pump station.
But it's to me, it's insignificant, and we're not really, you know. So it's either you're overcharging San Quentin, which you stated a year and a half ago, or you're billing them exactly the cost of collection and treatment. And it just seems to me is that, you know, that money that somehow this agency can't do. It just, you know, I don't know why you can sit there and say that we're, this agency is taking money away from yours, when at the same time, it, you know, we're not getting that much more from them.
If correction stayed with Ross Valley under this contract, they'd want a new contract and a revised fee structure, and that fee structure would probably be close to what we're charging them, or less, because you have a lower strength factor you reported. So the Ross Valley ratepayers would still be out that same amount of money.
We would charge them what would be the reasonable cost of services, which would involve both the collection and the transportation and the treatment. So, and you might as well add this to the other tier list of arbitration topics, because this is clearly going to be part of that as well. We are a collection agency, as are you, and that makes us different from CMSA. CMSA is not a collection agency. It's not a transportation agency. It does some of those things, especially internally, but it is not... it's not a member of the JPA. It is the JPA. And so we have certain privileges and rights and responsibilities as a member. And that's what I'm talking about. And this is an undermining of a member of the JPA
by
the JPA.
San Quentin
has never been annexed to you. You've had the benefit of a long-term contract with them.
Right.
And so they've just been a separate agency. Or a separate satellite.
I think you call it a satellite collection agency.
Yeah. They've just been a satellite.
A client is really what they are.
Or a client.
Yeah.
And yet you're...
Not unlike the hospital, the Marin General, another client. And in theory, you could contract with Marin General and get them to transport their sewage for free through the Ross Valley pipes and give them half the price. Be a great deal.
No, they're within your district. They're part of your district, and they're not separate.
They're annexed into it.
They're annexed into the jurisdiction of your district.
Now, they could separately contract with you for a lower EDU.
Yeah.
And the same with
It's not, if you're in the college or you're in.
I mean, anybody can contract with you for a lower EDU.
No, they can't. I mean, there are basic rules about how you cannot charge someone less than the actual cost of learning it. That's the whole, that's a state law governing us. And that's Jason dealing with that same state law, the basic cost of services principles.
All right, it's going to require some neutral party. Okay, is there any other comments? Does anybody have any changes to this agreement, or should we just?
So let's just have one more statement about at the time that the section of the force main that is that San Quentin is a party to uses a portion of it to get to the main that CMSA maintains. At the time that needs to be addressed, who is it that, let's just say it has to be addressed all at once, who is it that contributes? San Quentin, Corte Madera, Larkspur, and Ross Valley?
Well, under the JPA, that is owned by certain entities, so these few entities would have to fund it. Now, what we could do is if we contract with corrections, we could have a provision in this multi-year contract saying that we need to collect a little bit of funds each year to designate it separately, so that way when this interceptor has to be replaced in 20 to 25 years at some point in time, or sooner based on some condition assessment, that there will be a pool of money that the agency has collected and is dedicated and allocated separately for that share of that contribution, but then figuring out how much each of these agencies are going to contribute. You know, that has to be figured out amongst the owner agencies. Because there's no...
Based on EDU or flow?
Well, that's for the agencies to figure it out because there's no designation ownership in the JPA for these assets. It just says it's owned by this group.
Okay, well, right now, Jason, how does that... Say there's a failure of that type.
Tomorrow, which pipe?
The one that we're talking about. The
54-inch big pipe?
Yeah. There's a failure. Okay? Does this agency... I mean, is it the member agencies come up with the money? Is it CMSA does the work and then bills the member agency? Or is it just one member agency that pays for it? And that's one, you know, kind of a three-part
question. This is separate from this contract discussion.
Right. Yeah. It's totally separate. Okay. San Quentin's not even part of the deal. That's part of it. That's one aspect of it. And then number two is, do we even budget in the next item, a set aside for that pipe?
Well, the first thing that we need to do is inspect that pipe, and that'd be something that, you know, would need to happen in the next probably 10 years based on the age of that pipe, and then we'd have to figure out with these agencies how we're going to do that inspection work. And we'd have to figure that out. We'd have to hire someone that could be something that was funded by the agencies, something that CMSA, you know, built into our CIP to do that inspection and assessment work. And based on the findings of that, then you would understand what the condition was, and then the consultant expert that you hired would tell you, well, there's probably so much service life left in this section of pipe, and we could inspect all the way back to where it ties into the Corte Madera, you know, connection underneath 101. None of that's in CMSA's CIP right now or any of the member agencies' CIPs. I mean, San Rafael has the same situation on the 45-inch interceptor. They own that. We maintain a little piece of it. But
how much of it? How many feet?
Do we maintain?
Like 300 feet, 1,000 feet?
Oh, you know, maybe 500 feet of it, mm-hmm. Something like that. We maintain, you know, probably triple that of the Ross Valley interceptor. These are just round numbers. I haven't looked into that.
You were there to do maintenance of it from the vents and certain valve pits, or would you please tell me the scope of your maintenance?
Of the interceptors?
Of the Ross Valley side of the CMSA inflow.
What we currently do and what we've historically done is we just monitor the corrosion potential of the section of the pipeline. So we do annual cathodic protection monitoring to see if there's any corrosion that's occurring in that section of pipeline. Mm-hmm. And there hasn't been any, which is good news. And that would be a problem if there was corrosion, because then you have the steel corroding and you have the internal shell corroding, and the concrete would fall off. But, so we do that annually.
Okay, so
but
it's specifically for cathodic.
Yeah, because it's a buried operating force main. There isn't any pits on it or any of these other types of appurtenances. It's just
there's nothing else you do on that.
That's right.
Okay, back to...
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
This force main that's been brought up, as I understand it, from what's been said now, it serves Lost Valley, Port Madera, and San Quentin, is that right?
Yes.
So, if there is a breakdown in that force main, there's a major spill, who's liable for it?
Sounds like the three agencies you just said.
Sounds like it.
Well, then the question I guess I have before we go forward with this thing, why don't we inspect that or get somebody to inspect it so we know what the deuce we're getting into?
The 54-inch horse beam?
Whatever, because I'm reading this 218 notice that says from Lost Valley, our collection system is in terrible shape. I don't know what kind of shape that thing's in. Do we know what kind of shape it's in? You just said, based on what you know, it's 10 years. I don't know what that means.
This is the 54-inch interceptor. This is not the San Quentin assets. This is the big pipeline that runs down Sir Francis Drake. And
all right. So what are we getting into in with San Quentin?
Nothing. This is a completely side discussion that we're having. It has nothing to do with this, right, this agreement or any of the work experience.
Something.
This is a good JPA discussion. It's something that we could agendize in the future about the San Rafael interceptor, you know, the Ross Valley interceptor, but it has nothing to do with really this agreement or the scope of work of this agreement.
What I've heard, I want to make sure I don't.
Why not?
Upset my car. I heard somebody say something about the 16-inch force main on San Quentin property and inspecting that. Wasn't that you, Commissioner DePauw? I forgot who was talking.
Yeah, it could have been me.
Yeah. It sounds like that's just a given that the CMSA plans on inspecting that or wants to inspect it. And, of course, they'll need to go through the Ross Valley Sanitary District to do it.
Why would we need to go through the Ross Valley Sanitary District?
We own it.
Corrections has a different opinion. Mm-hmm. That's all I can tell you.
Another litigious issue.
Yeah. Between Lost Valley and Corrections.
You and Corrections.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So do we have any other comments to put into this agreement? That's really the question before us tonight. Or is this agreement with CDC acceptable to the board members so that we can move forward?
Well, it's not acceptable to me.
You
knew that already.
Yeah.
Figured out. Staff is looking for some more discussion of any comments to propose to CDC on.
Well, I guess my comment would be that they should be apprised of the fact that this has to do with the systems on their property and not their contribution to any future need to improve the interceptor that they contribute to, so to speak, so that they know that if and when that comes up, I mean, not if, but when that comes up, that will have to be addressed with a separate assessment.
That's correct. Of the 54-inch.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I'd like to just make sure that's written down.
That would be something that wouldn't necessarily be in this one-year interim agreement. That would be something that we would include in multi-year agreement if we go forward with all this.
Okay.
That we want to build that into, you know, a long-term capital plan, or at least have a provision in there that at some point in the future, this 54-inch interceptor will need to have some level of maintenance, repair, rehabilitation, that there's a provision in the agreement, you know, stating that, so there's an understanding that there may be some contribution in the future that we're going to need, or the agencies on that side of the hill are going to need from corrections. But it's something that's not germane to this one-year agreement.
Got it.
But it's a good comment, and we'll definitely, once we're working on if this eventually is approved at some point, once we're going forward and developing a multi-year agreement, we could bring, you know, that discussion to the table and integrate some provisions in the long-term agreement.
I'd like to make sure that I I'm comfortable that we aren't assuming additional liability. What I find interesting about the discussion is, on the one hand, we're saying that West Valley has collected a significant amount more than we intend to because of the potential for repairs, et cetera. So therefore, I'm assuming that's not in our number. And so my question is, if there's a failure, it sounds like you were preparing to pay for that.
Yes.
Perhaps I didn't.
No.
Okay,
yes.
if you were, they were servicing the contract, if we're now servicing the contract as a failure, why wouldn't there be an expectation by San Quentin that we would repair it if they were looking for their provider, West Valley?
If there was a critical failure of a major asset at that pump station, it's discussed in here a little bit, but essentially what would happen is we would have to stabilize the situation. We would notify San Quentin Prison.
Right.
We would notify the regulators if there's any potential overflow. We'd grab water samples. We'd post notices out there.
Right.
We would inform the contact people of the corrections what the issue was.
Right.
All of that, notification and addressing the situation, is all extra work in the contract.
Okay.
That we would track the time and materials to do that. Then there's authorization in this contract where we could hire contractors and consultants as needed to make any repairs. So if it was just a pump, an expensive pump failing, there's other pumps in there. So we would say to corrections, so here's this pump's failed. This is outside the scope to replace this pump because it's not just routine maintenance.
Right.
Here we have a quote of $80,000 to replace this pump, extra services, then our staff time to install it, and so forth.
So therefore, the contract we have with them is different than the contract Ross Valley had with them with regard to major repairs.
Well, the contract, this interim contract, is far more detailed than the contract they have with Ross Valley, the 1981 contract. And the 81 contract doesn't really talk about any of that. And we reviewed with corrections Ross Valley's 10-year capital plan, and there was no money dedicated for any major work at the San Quentin pump station.
So therefore, your explanation with regard to the difference between what this contract is calling for and your contract, it can be attributed to the potential repairs.
Not on a planned 10-year basis. I mean, we're talking about fixing $200 million worth of pipe over the next 20 years.
Somebody's assuming that responsibility.
Well,
I just want to make
CMS
sure that not, because it sounded like you were,
no, CMS
you were assuming
CMS
the responsibility.
If that pipe 16-inch blows and sewage runs down the hill and into the bay, then that becomes a CMSA problem.
Previously, it was your problem.
It was our problem.
Yeah, we would be liable.
It still is our problem if that contract hasn't been ratified yet.
Well, it would become.
Yeah, I'm
assuming this.
Yeah.
It'd be something that they would look for us to address, get proposals for, and submit to them. You know, here's these proposals for these types of services to address this issue. And they'd have to approve that. Then we would manage the work, and we'd be reimbursed for our staff time with overhead to do all that.
Good. So the amount of money they collected in anticipation of this repair, which is no longer necessary if this contract is signed, they're pretty clear, I presume, it would occur during our watch.
We're liable.
Well, I hope we're not confusing the interceptor with the force main on the same equipment.
I could be. I admit that I could be. I'm just talking about if something occurs on this linkage, this piece.
Well, then that's 16-inch piece. It's according to corrections owned by them. They're responsible for it. They would have to replace it.
So we're not assuming an additional responsibility.
No. Our responsibility would be is if there's a problem there, that we would notify them.
Right.
And if it was a critical emergency, then we have authority through the contract to take what measures we need, hire what service providers to address it, and they would reimburse us for that.
So they're, in effect, self-insuring. They're going to pay for it.
In a sense.
And under your contract, they weren't.
They weren't charged.
Let me give an example, I think, of what might address your concerns. In the past, much recently in 2005, state property with a sanitary sewer force main going through it that arguably is the Ross Valley Sanitary District's force main. I'm hearing different at the table today, was drilled through by a contractor on the state property. State property doesn't allow folks to come in and do the underground service or market locate requirements when they do a project. Everyone knows how it works with the state, right? It's the way they want it, too reckless, whatever, when it comes to infrastructure upgrades. So a driller blew through that 16-inch force main. It was the Ross Valley Sanitary District that got the call to not only protect the bay from the overflow that was occurring, but make sure that the flows were managed so the repair could be done, which meant bringing out heavy equipment, which we have at our disposal, and the staff who had the capability of berming the entire overflow area to protect the bay and then, of course, effect repairs, and get in a second-party contractor to do the work of repairing the pipe while we manage the pump stations and the flows. So
you paid for all that?
It was under our agreement with them. I didn't work at that level. Okay. I'm trying to really monitor the cost. The point is the Ross Valley Sanitary District were the first responders for this Category 1 sanitary sewer overflow.
I'm just trying to figure out, you're assuming additional liability.
So my concern about the whole force main is, I think everyone understands what I meant by litigious. Right now I know that's a point of contention right now, so I just want to let you know that we have historically maintained, not only the force main,
like,
but the dry side
of the
pump station.
I'd like to see who did pay for it. That'd be good.
Okay, sure.
Jason?
I imagine it'll be back in 2005, 2000, maybe 2004.
I think what we need to do is we need to talk to CDC about cataclysmic events. You know, if there is a spill, if there is something that exceeds. You know, right now I'm only seeing $150,000 of extra scope of work in this contract. It's very, unless you can point to where it says that, you know, something beyond that number because it's an emergency, you know. That,
like one of their people drilling through it.
Yeah, that all of a sudden that it's going to exceed 150. And I just wonder, maybe we can just talk to CDC about.
Yeah, definitely. I'll bring that up with them and tell them about the discussion we had. And
Just regarding the liability, because if their actions is, well, we own it, it's our pipe. You know, it's state property up until a certain point, and then it becomes our pipe. Well, okay, then what are you going to do to take care of your pipe if it breaks? Okay, that's basically where, you know, I want to just protect the agency from getting into something that, you know, we're going to have to spend a lot of extra money for a repair that, you know, maybe because we overlooked it in this contract.
You know, I understand that. We can definitely bring that up with them, but generally that would be extra work. And mm-hmm. Well, it's emergency work.
Yeah.
Under the emergency provision, if there's emergency work, we have authorization to handle it, address it, and it says we're going to get reimbursed.
So there is an where is it?
Well, under the replacement of parts and equipment, it says this obligation shall not include replacement of equipment or parts due to sudden breakage or equipment failure, which should be considered extra work. But that's more equipment than.
Page 2, item 4, emergency services.
See if they can add some language in there that, you know, that they will reimburse. You know, it just says, you know, that we hire as needed. But, I mean, I don't know if there's a trump here because of the $150,000 of other services.
You understand that. What we could do is we'll just suggest adding provision to the fees and payment section. Fee for emergency services where there's no dollar associated with it.
Yeah.
So if there's emergency, we're going to use a gun to stabilize a critical events, you know, where there's the loss of property, life, so forth, harm the environment, that will stabilize and address it, and they're going to reimburse us for all of our costs. So
sure.
We'll propose that type of provision for the agreement. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
just tell me again, for all this effort, what additional revenue is this agency receiving for this?
$350,000 a year.
For this year?
Each year?
No. This is a one-year contract.
Yeah, but it continues only three. It's presumably three. Right?
So if we decided not to do it, they would stay with Cross Valley, or they have to contract with Cross Valley?
Yeah, they would, if we decided not to do it, they would look for another service provider. But see, the interesting thing is we're already doing the bulk of the work with the wastewater treatment and disposal services, and we've been doing that for since 1985. No one else can provide that service.
Well, I guess what I heard earlier meant, you know, I want to get into the interceptor versus this versus that, just generically. I heard someone from Ross Valley say that one of the reasons their rates were so high was to set money aside. If and when something breaks, the money's there to fix it. Right?
That's what I heard, too.
Right. So but does that mean there's a pot of money sitting somewhere, theoretically, there?
And if you read that, we're going to try to bond for $100 million to fix pipe.
I'm worried about San Quentin.
Well, I understand that, but if it's our responsibility and if something happens, we have to fix it. And if it requires a capital upgrade, we have to do that. If it's ours, if it's someone else's, then they have to do it.
I'm going back to the point where you theoretically have been setting money aside for this all these years. That's why their rates were so high. I think that's what you said.
No, that's not what I said. That's not what I said. No. Not at all. I said our half of the collection and treatment fee. We get the collection fee and Central Marin gets the treatment fee. Our half of the collection fee goes into operations and capital. Mm-hmm. And that's $1 million. And we're going to lose $1 million. That means that everybody else in the Ross Valley and Larkspur has to pay more to make up $1 million that we're not going to get from San Quentin. It's easy accounting. It's not that tough at all.
It's just not easy. How do I say it? When your records and your contract and your agreement with an agency do not stipulate that you're putting aside this money for repairs they may need, that you're underwriting the rest of us, and we've gotten a nice what do you call it? What's the term that they used? Don't ever lose San Quentin, because it's a what's
cash
it?
Cow.
Huh? Cash cow. That's the.
I'm not politically correct or wise.
We're not going to. Well,
I think what we're facing with here is that they've terminated the contract with Ross Valley.
They've terminated.
You know, we've been talking to them for a year about
this. Yeah, we
have
a contract.
They've asked us to prepare a contract. The board's approved that. We have a pretty good contract. Yeah. We'll suggest adding this language. And.
So the language will make up for any money that's needed to repair anything that's responsible
for critical emergencies
in the next year.
And so if there's which essentially would be major pipeline failure, that would be, or there's an earthquake and there was, you know, a rupture in the wet well side of the pump station, so all the sewage flows out, you know, to the bay. Right. So we can talk about these significant, you know, types of events and make sure there's some language in there to reimburse us for our costs to address those events.
Anybody from the public wish to comment on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back for the motion.
No action, right? Just
no, I guess no action. Now we provide staff with direction. And,
we gave direction about making sure that there's some language pertaining to this. Yeah.
Okay. And the next up is item number 11. Unless you guys want to have a break. Okay, let's do a 10-minute break. Ross Valley Sanitation District Resolution establishing a CMSA policy or a payment policy. Jason?
Okay, thank you, Chair DeFlore. So the Ross Valley Sanitary District Board adopted the resolution that's attached to the staff report. And actually, I have a handout here because there's a page missing from the staff report, Ross Valley staff report, and the resolution, which I copied to you all and gave you here. And I highlighted, you know, the various items that we believe are inaccurate statements their documents. Essentially, so their board adopted a resolution, and this resolution was establishing a payment policy for CMSA, and that was a 3-2 vote at their meeting on March 21st. Several days prior to that meeting, we received a copy of Ross Valley's agenda package, because we're on their agenda mailing list. We reviewed it. We saw that particular item. We reviewed the staff reports and the resolution, and we saw that there were several inaccuracies in both documents, that there were potential conflicts with the JPA in the resolution, and conferred with Chair Dupar and Vice Chair Hartzell on that, our board officers, and they gave us some guidance and said, well, first, staff, you should review in detail these documents and prepare an analysis of what are the inaccurate statements and why, and then ask Council Gobey to prepare a letter to the Ross Valley Board of Directors to make them aware of the inaccuracies and the conflicts with the JPA and the perpetuating some of the legal challenges that we have with the district. So staff completed the analysis of the documents, and that is attached to the staff report tonight. And Council Gobey prepared a letter, and both were packaged up, and Commissioner Hartzell sent those to the Ross Valley Board of Directors. And essentially, I could answer any questions tonight that the board has with these statements that we believe are inaccurate or that conflict with the JPA. But all of that information is attached to the staff report. But this resolution was adopted on the 3-2 vote with Directors Miggs and Ager, casting the dissenting votes on it. And it essentially says that Ross Valley is going to pay us based on estimated EDUs. As we saw the section of the JPA, it says EDUs, flow, and volume and quality, or volume and quality is determined by the board to not be appropriate. So this resolution, if the staff were to follow it, is conflicting in that nature. Then also the resolution says that if Ross Valley is going to integrate CMSA rate increases into their Proposition 218 notice for their rate increase, and if CMSA has any other rate increases during that Prop 218 time period, that Ross Valley is not going to pay those increases, which conflicts also in staff and legal counsel's perspective with the JPA. The JPA, as we saw in that Section 14, simply said this agency sets the charge and the members agree to pay it and the members agree to derive the revenues to do it. And CMSA, as we've talked about several times in the past, is exempt from Proposition 218 as a joint powers agency currently under state law. So those are the problems that we highlighted, and Council Gobey wanted to bring to the attention of the Ross Valley board members. And with that, I could answer any questions in regards to the analysis that we prepared internally.
Okay. Well, considering that we didn't pass the item number 7, the regional charge allocation method based on flow, and we're now back to EDUs, isn't this kind of, is it a moot point? I mean, I know my big concern with this is that CMSA sets the policy and the member agencies follow, not the other way around.
Yeah.
And so that is my biggest beef with this resolution that was passed, was that, you know, that they're saying, well, we don't care what you want. We're going to do it this way, and, tough. But since we are now still on EDUs, and I know that our policy is based on actuals of the prior year, that becomes our estimated basis for allocating charges for the future year or the current fiscal year. Will Ross Valley, under this one, just say, well, we estimate it to be this. We don't care what your policy said based on actual. We're estimating a lower number, and that's what we're going to pay. I mean, that's in total conflict with the JPA. That's an arbitration issue that's going to come down. I don't know what
the legal ramifications of the arbitrator are going to do to this resolution. But it just seems to me that it's kind of a salvo that Ross Valley fired to just basically say, we're going to do whatever we want. And I'm kind of perturbed at this agency that you don't want to follow the JPA finance policy. So, I mean, but I think it's to tell you the truth, I think it's a moot point right now because we're still at EDUs.
Could I ask, we'll accept that the whole thing about any scheduled increases from CMSA that you won't pay them. May I ask Commissioner Sullivan a question as to what he understands about a portion of this resolution that you have? In the resolution, the part on attachment A that's highlighted, when your agency is referring to the payment agreement for treatment services dated October 1st, 2006 constitutes a valid and binding amendment to the JPA agreement, what was the
That was the payment agreement that was with the whole bond finance.
Oh, right. So it's not treatment like this says. It's actually for the creation of a new facility.
The name of the document is
that's the title
payment agreement for treatment services.
Oh.
So that's why it's in that way.
But okay.
It's actually language taken directly out of the CMSA.
But it's not an amendment to the JPA. It's an entirely separate agreement that all the agencies approved.
Yeah.
It was never characterized as an amendment to the JPA. It wasn't presented as an amendment to the JPA, and it doesn't amend anything in the JPA.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Any other comments?
I have a question based on what was just said by you, Mr. Chair, that since we're going to go with EDUs this year, why waste our time on this? In essence, that's what you said. It was easy tonight to say, well, it's 3-3, we'll just go with EDUs. And I said, why? Well, this and that. I'd like somebody to come back at the next meeting that's going to specifically say, we expect to get next year so we can make a rational decision as to whether or not EDUs is the way to go or flow with all the weights in it. Mm-hmm. Because just to say, well, we'll look at it next year, we better have something definitive because this thing will go on forever. And I just don't think we can just say, well, we'll take a look at it next year. We ought to have something very specific that's going to help us make that decision. I don't want to get into it, but, these EDUs were manipulated to cover costs, and the costs are being spread throughout the whole region. And flow is pretty straightforward. As you said, Mr. Chair, that's what this agency is proposing to do for their own constituents, yet it's not good enough for this agency. So I think we need something very definitive that we expect to get next year.
Okay.
I'm going to bring that back to the next meeting.
This is an informational item, and we can provide direction to staff or take no action.
We can bring an item that shows what our revenue needs are for fiscal year 13 and how that's allocated based on EDUs, and we can show how it would be allocated based on flow or any of these alternatives. In this table, we can assume that we contract with Department of Corrections and pull San Quentin out of it. We can show the net revenues, being reduced, and what the percentages are for the agencies under the alternatives, and what the cost, what the revenue needs from the agencies are. We can do that kind of a breakdown. And
I think we need that, Jason, because I think when we start talking about percentages and EDUs, we're really mixing apples with oranges here. When you go on flow, I know it all comes down to percentages, but let's look at dollars. Let's look at what next year's budget forecast is for
how it translates to everybody given the different allocations.
Based on an EDU count, based on what would our revenues be from SD2, San Rafael, Ross Valley,
based on an EDU count for debt service and for operations. You know, we know that San Quentin isn't part of debt service because they're not part of the debt service agreement. So they're out of that. So we're going to know what the member agencies are going to be paying for debt service in the future. Plus, you know, and that's assuming that San Quentin pulls out of or terminates their contract with Ross Valley.
They've done that.
Well, I know they've done that, but you know, let's just see what the number looks like, because right now we're assuming that 4.6% of their fee is an EDU count that's going to be collected for debt service, and I don't believe that because they're not part of the debt service agreement.
Well, how about what we do is we'll construct this breakdown for these different methods. In this breakdown, we'll assume that San Quentin contracts with CMSA this fiscal year with that amount of revenue mm-hmm. that we're going to receive. And we could talk with the finance committee before, because we'll be looking at getting together to look at the draft budget. We can, during that meeting, we can take a look at this breakdown, the cost allocations, with a specific, you know, analysis of San Quentin's revenues, how much of that is allocated to debt service versus operating. The pump station operation and maintenance, little $100,000, that's operating. But then there's the treatment piece, which is the $1.1 million, that can be allocated to debt service and operating. Our initial thought was that we know what the rate is for debt service, let's just take that rate times the EDU, figure out the dollar amount, and apply it to the debt service, so that way the members are paying their proportionate share. Anyways,
I think they are part of the debt. I mean, we've been collecting money from them.
You guys just included them.
You included them
because they're
part of
you. Yeah, they're not signatory to that agreement.
No, we are.
But how can their ADUs? Here's the concept. You contracted with them. You took in their EDUs. You raised your EDUs. Now, when they're out of your contract, they're no longer part of your EDUs.
Right.
So, and it's only the member agencies' EDUs that count. San Quentin doesn't count. They're not part of that debt service agreement.
Well, historically, they were. No, that's not true.
They're not signatory to that agreement.
No, of course they're not signatory, but we were collecting so many EDUs times so many dollars and sending that amount of money to CMSA, which was split between almost half and half between operations and debt.
That's not how it worked.
That was how Ross Valley integrated San Quentin into that plan.
But you're saying they needed to be signatory to be able to approve those payments?
No,
from part of the collected money that we've gotten.
No, if we said we have 25,000 EDUs,
yeah.
And we report for that 25,000, we're going to give you $4 million, mm-hmm. 2 million of which is for bond treatment and 2 million of which is for operations. How can you say that's not money coming from San Quentin to go to bonds?
I'm not, as staff, saying that that's not money coming, that you're collecting from corrections for San Quentin treatment wastewater for the capital improvements or the bonds and what we're doing.
Okay.
All I'm saying is that San Quentin State Prison and the Department of Corrections aren't signatory to that agreement. So if they contract with CMSA, then we need to figure out the revenues we're going to receive for San Quentin, how we allocate that to debt service and how we allocate it to operations.
And the principles are the same principles that guide everything else. You have to be fair, and you have to make sure that you don't over or undercharge them compared to San Rafael or Cordero or Ross Valley.
Right now, what we collect for them would includes, you know, debt service. We just have to allocate it. What we, you know, I've talked about with staff that we've allocated, saying,
is that a yes or a no, though? I never really quite hear you get to yes when we ask a question. I'm sorry, I'm interrupting, but you're going on, and I heard what he asked, and the way I see it, the answer is either yes or no.
Well, you want to phrase it, and I'll give you a yes or no?
That'd be nice for me. I don't know how Peter feels.
Well, I thought I was answering the question, Commissioner Blasco.
Yeah.
I'm a simple guy. I like simple responses.
I understand. Yeah.
Thanks.
But in terms of the fairness of service, basic service, but
yeah.
In theory, when you make an agreement with San Quentin, you have to make an agreement with them that's comparable to all the other agreements, and you have to consider the cost of debt and the cost of operations,
in that fair agreement. I mean, that's not my idea. That's state law. So
that's built into that dollar amount that we've talked about.
Okay. So it's in there. It's just
so yes.
You know, fixed.
Yes.
So the answer is yes.
Yes. It's built into the dollar amount.
I'm satisfied.
Okay.
It would have been a better way to ask the question.
Remember, I talked a little about there's an EDU number that is based on your current EDU. There's the strength factor as part of it. There's our $275 per EDU rate, which includes debt service and operating rate.
Right.
And then there's added to all that is our estimate to operate and maintain the pump station. So it is built into it because our regular rate is multiplied by the EDU count of the strength factor. Yeah.
So our proportion of the debt service remains the same. Sound constants. As do the.
Yeah, as long as, you know, because we just need to internally on a county basis show we're getting this much from them, we're going to apply and put in our budget too, we're going to apply this much to the debt service, so we figure out the net amount to allocate to you all, it's fair. We're going to apply this much to the operating, so when we calculate the net revenues operating through the GPA agreement, then it's all fair. That's kind of what we talk about conceptually internally.
But
it all comes with the same pot of money anyways from the members, how we distribute it, you know, saying when we're going to get that revenue, which includes debt service dollars.
But if there's fewer EDUs in the total accounting, because we're doing a 1.3 and they used to do a 1 point something higher, or 2 point or whatever it was.
2.3.
Whatever.
Yes.
You know, we lost the 3,000 or something EDUs. The number of EDUs that's divided among the member agencies is smaller, so the price per EDU, cost per EDU, has to go up.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes or no?
Right.
Yeah. If the total amount collected stays the same.
Okay. Yeah, I have a question, but Mike.
You're ahead of me more.
I think it kind of depends on where we are.
We are. Okay. It'll be distributed across the whole thing.
I said I have a request. I'm sorry, Mr. Billy's in here tonight, but based on the reaction to his letter from Ross Valley, which was not paid attention to apparently, or was and was voted down, on a 218 notice, which we have here.
It's a handout, yeah.
Right, it's a handout. And when you go out for a bond measure, you have an attorney's certification that's correct, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm assuming this meets the 218 requirements. But there are some definite statements in this 218 notice, I think, that are not correct. Starting with the first paragraph, the second paragraph, it says that part of the money from the last 8 rate increase was wastewater treatment costs from Septic Marine Sanitation, CMSA, were high. And however, the note we got from Jason tonight in the staff report was $5. So I think that's misleading. I think that on page 3 of this notice where it says the sewer sergeant charge, the department's sewer service charge includes $440 per parcel to fund wastewater treatment at CMSA, and Jason is saying no, it's $275.
Well, our fee is $275 per equivalent dwelling unit.
Yeah.
They're calling it per parcel, so we don't know how they derive 440 per parcel. If per parcel is the same as equivalent dwelling unit, then this number is high. It just was odd that we've never seen this number. We don't know how that number was calculated. That's all.
It's in the change from the flow-based rate. We didn't talk about this earlier, but going to flow-based is extremely complicated, as you can imagine. In the first year, we're going to go to a 60% fixed, 40% flow-based system. And under that system, the 440 is the fixed component, and then there's a calculated flow component depending on how much water you used the previous winter. And that this is all stuff will come from our flow consultant.
Wait a minute.
You know, I could have four parcels with one house on it.
A dollar is a dollar. If we're charging you $275 for treatment and debt service, how can you say in this that the sewer service charge includes approximately $440 per parcel to fund wastewater treatment?
I mean, we're only collecting $275
for both.
For both halves, and yet the tree, you know, it just seems to me it's like, I mean, you know, if we're
okay, without going through a lecture on what flow based is, flow based is based on meters. Okay, flow based is based on meters. The total number of meters is significantly less than the EDUs.
Okay.
So the 440 is per meter as a fixed charge in the flow based system.
But
it's
you
not
just
per parcel.
Okay, wait a minute. But you've just stated in this agreement that you're gonna pay us based on EDUs. So do we get 440 or do we get 275? Sounds to me we're going to get 275 and you're going to get 440 from these things.
We're going to get 440 times 15 and you're going to get 275 times 22 or 23,000. It's exactly that's how you do the flow-based system. That's why it's such a complicated process, and you're more than welcome to come to one of these.
Then you can all these questions.
Because everybody else is going to get to do this too. I mean, there's a whole raft of attorneys that represent apartment houses that want to change out of flow base because of the basic injustice of charging each 300 square meter place the same as the houses in Canada.
As a 25,000 square foot place.
Well, rather than debate that.
Yeah. So you don't like that, okay.
No, well, it's no, rather no. misleading I mean, to the average citizen.
Come on down to the meetings, you guys.
Hold on. What?
I've
got 30
minutes.
Please.
The third thing that I see in this notice that I think is misleading, and for whatever reason it was, has been misleading, the numbers we've seen, but on table one you show the rates for Ross Valley, and on table two you show the rates for Larkspur. And you say, fixed charge, rate proposed dollars is shown as not to exceed. You show for Ross Valley the rates minus the property taxes that they're paying, right? So in essence, they're paying more than $575. They're paying $575 an amount on their property taxes. So for sewer services, they're paying a lot more than $575 in Ross Valley. In the case of Larkspur, you don't have taxes around the planet, it's higher.
So you're talking about the difference between a sewer charge and the total cost of the sewage?
Yeah, I don't care what it is.
This is the charge that's on the bill.
Okay, but it's all sewer related, and I think it's misleading to say that it's less in Ross Valley.
Well, I live in Larkspur, and I get a much higher bill than a property that I own in San Antonio.
Okay.
That's just part of the fact.
Okay. No, I'm sorry. I can't understand this because that's not what I'm trying to say, I guess. I'm saying that on your property bill, if you live in Larkspur, there's no property tax for sewer service. It's the charge.
Right. And there's a surcharge on, there's always been an add-on that for a long time was a lot less, but there's always been an add-on to compensate for the fact that when Larkspur signed on with Ross Valley taking over, they didn't give up that portion of the property tax, they kept it for city services. And so...
So we in Larkspur pay more, basically.
So we pay more because
yes, I know you.
Ross Valley adds more on than the others get from the property tax.
But the people in Ross Valley, do they not pay a fixed amount of property taxes dedicated to sewer service?
Yes, they do.
So if you add that to this...
Yes.
Yes.
No,
yes.
They don't. Ross Valley doesn't usually mention that on their flyer.
I understand that. It's misleading. It says not to exceed.
Well, that's actually the ad valorem tax and varies per person depending on what the property.
Yeah, but the person doesn't care if you're writing a check for $600 or $800. If it's truly $800, you're in that tax bill. $800 is going to sewer services, and this is misleading. I just think it ought to be clarified.
We believe that it's misleading.
Good.
Somebody saw our bill, they just see 275 instead of 440. I know you can explain
anyway,
it.
If you'd ask the attorney to look at that.
Well, it's disingenuous.
But I think, what can we do here? I mean,
we ought to have something on the record at the hearing at Ross Valley, that's all.
Okay. But do we have Jack issue another letter? Do we go to the arbitration? Do we put it?
We're going to go to arbitration.
Yeah, that's what you're going to have the arbitration
with. Okay. Well, you provided this informational package, Jason. I don't know what.
This was a handout during my verbal report, just as information for you all. Okay.
Can I just ask one more question?
Sure.
If my house is on two parcels, are you telling me that you're going to start charging me two fixed charges for each of those parcels?
If you
I mean,
have,
one for each?
If you have two EDUs now, you're paying for
No, two. I have one EDU.
One EDU. Then you're going to, and you have one meter.
One meter.
1 meter. Then you're going to pay one meter charge.
Because you say here it's per parcel.
It's per meter, basically. I don't know. I'm not going to say why the attorneys chose that particular language, but it's based on the water district. And so we're going to use the water district.
I understand that.
And however the water district calls it, whether it calls it parcel or whatever, that's the number that's
being used. They don't. They call it meter.
Okay.
They don't care how many parcels you've got. That's a very complicated part of land development and land division and history. Pat's got his hand up.
Commissioner Gwanska.
I was hoping to ask Commissioner Borough a question.
Certainly.
Now, you're doing the fee for sewer in Santa Claus about $660? $639?
Somewhere there.
And how have you done the rate increases in your city?
How have we done them?
Yeah, in the past. I'm not familiar with how you did things down there.
Same as you're doing them through our 218 hearing. We sent the rates out. We attached a very detailed plan on the last rate increases we did, how much money went for operating expenses, how much went for long-term capital improvements, and how much money we're spending here. And that's what we did.
Thanks.
You can get your copies of that if you want to see
okay.
it.
I'll let you know. Thanks.
Okay. Can we move on? Committed.
Yeah, I am. 7 o'clock.
Okay.
Point raised.
Next up is item number 12. This is a revised 10-year capital CIP for the fiscal year 12-13 budget. Jason has a nice slideshow, but do you want to skip the slideshow and just
we
get
could,
to the heart
we
of
could
it?
We can skip the slideshow. But, you know, we provided a copy of the revised 10-year capital improvement program in the agenda packets. Mm-hmm. And if there were any comments on this document?
This is a real spreadsheet.
See, I didn't get the real spreadsheet.
Oh, you can get the real spreadsheet.
Never mind.
Well,
I got the printout from the
you went through all the details of this.
That's
you get it out. So
you just go through
the. You already remember if there's any comments.
What are you talking about?
You already know it. I mean, it's. We could add a slideshow too.
Oh, do you have it?
Millions and millions of dollars.
The comment from staff right now is that we can move this item to next month for sake of longevity.
We'll have the draft budget presentation, so we'll incorporate this into the draft budget.
So do I have a consensus that we move this to next month?
Yes.
How are you feeling about that, Peter?
Oh, I'm okay with that.
Well, we expect to see you.
No, you misinterpret.
Staff, from the public, do they have any comment on this item? Do you guys want to see this next month?
They've never seen it before, right?
I was going to say, we've been through this. Jason, for the record, we've been through this with us before, right?
Last year, we went through this in the major revisions to the structure of the CIP. We essentially, you know, we now we have one big, you know, 10-year schedule versus three separate schedules. We developed a one-year, you know, detailed descriptions with justifications and the phases of each major project. Then we have detailed smaller descriptions with schedules for some of the routine repair maintenance projects over 10 years. So we reviewed that revised format last year. We've edited this, expanded the descriptions. We've revised cost estimates. We've moved projects, you know, up in the future, pushed them back based on condition assessments. So we fully updated the CIP, and our CIP team did a great job.
I think it deserves our better attention.
I know it does, but I just...
I mean, not tonight. Yeah. I didn't even get much into it because I got home Monday and I worked on the packet.
Let's put it on next month's
agenda. Yeah, I'll add the presentation to the draft operating budget presentation. And that'll probably be one of the main things on the first thing on the agenda.
Okay. Do we specifically assign the energy savings from the generator to things like the biosolids and the fog and things like that? Or are they kept separately in the budget?
The way we do it, we just determine, we generate so much electricity,
right?
You know, with our cogeneration system.
Yeah, like
right now from the wastewater.
50% or something like that.
Yeah, it varies. I think it's probably a little more than that now. But the way that it impacts the budget is we just don't have to purchase as much electricity or purchase much natural gas. So it's all based on estimate of how many run hours are going to be on the engine, how much time we're going to save, how much money we're
going to
save.
You understand my question. There's an in-lieu cost. If our energy bill is 10 million and we're generating 50% of our energy with our generator, our energy bill would have been 20 million. So the 10 million really...
We don't really show that.
We don't show
it. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
The savings. What we do is one of the process metric reports we show a little of the savings each month by generation of the biogas used as fuel as a natural gas.
It's a great project, and it's really, there ought to be a way to say, I have solar panels on my roof, and I get a statement from my solar panel people every month. You save X number of trees and generated, this many kilowatts of energy.
Yeah, we could calculate and say, well, if we had to purchase, if we had to buy electricity for all of our needs, we can look at the, historic, per kilowatt hour charges during the peak period, peak period, non-peak period, what the demand charges are. It'd be millions.
Well, there are things that clearly fit into that, like the fog program and
right.
The biodigestible solids that feed the methane and feed the generator. So it's a real selling point to say we saved $5 million on energy by having the fog program or whatever.
Well, once we have that facility operational, we'll start tracking those metrics in terms of how many more hours of runtime are we receiving, are we realizing on the engine, and how does that translate to cost savings? But we haven't started receiving fog or food waste yet.
I gave you that article about the brewery, right? And getting, we can take the stuff from the brewery and the hops and all that stuff that's left over.
About a year ago. Getting that article.
No, it was a year ago I gave it to you.
Oh.
It increases your biogeneration way more than the weight. So you get like 3-1 or 4-1 from the hops.
But right now they go out to the pig farms.
Yeah, but we can make a lot of power.
And they drain, and as they put it in the trucks to go to the pig farms, the liquid waste runs through the bottom of the truck and into the storm sewers and causes Larkspur a huge problem.
Mm-hmm. That leachate shouldn't be allowed to go down.
I know.
Is it at the brewery? The Larkspur Landing?
It used to be that I would see it every time I had lunch there with my husband.
That's an illicit discharge.
It's been noted.
Okay, next up is the North Bay Watershed Association report.
Okay, there is no report because we didn't meet last week because this Friday is the annual conference.
Okay. Next up is the verbal report by commissioners and general manager. Jason.
Here's a handout here just briefly enough. As you all read in the paper, that the CalPERS Board of Administration is reducing the rate of return on their pension fund benefits. And they told us that's going to increase the miscellaneous pool employer contribution rates 1 to 2%. So we'll be increasing our CalPERS pension costs in our fiscal year 13 budget based on this information from the Board of Administration. We got a great workers' compensation experience modification rate from our insurance carrier, 0.62. It's kind of a series of safety, which was great. And we are currently regulating 94 dental offices in our service area under our mercury reduction program. And all of them are in full compliance with the program, which was great news. And that's about it.
Okay, next up, commissioners. Commissioner Borrow, anything?
Can I make a comment that has nothing to do with Ross Valley, but it's really, really interesting, and you ought to know about it?
Sure.
Okay.
No,
this is actually, it's not meant to be funny.
Who's
going to
say no?
Something came in the mail that was one of these deals where we had some account somewhere, and the address was always wrong. We're 38 Loma Vista. It said 37 Loma Vista. There are no houses on the odd side, and it would probably get trapped in the computer center and sit back to the bank. No such address. So apparently this went on for a long time, and One slipped through, and they said, you know, you've got this account somewhere. Where are you? You don't exist. So we had to claim it and do all this crapola. So I just thought, oh, well, I wonder what else. And I went on that website that's there with the state. I found $780 for my son. Another case of 37 Loma Vista. I mean, that just like, it took me 20 seconds.
So those were expired bank accounts that
well, they were more than bank accounts. They were not bank accounts. They were investments. But because of the fact that the thing got bounced by our computerized mail system. Mm. And several years ago when I did it, there was a lost bank account my husband had forgotten. It was only $325. But it was still kind of fun to get a check for $325 when you didn't expect it. So I did a look-see one of these times at just some names of the girls that would come over and hang out with my daughter. I found $1,200 for one girl. I found another, you know, $700 for somebody else. So do it for yourself and your parents and your offspring.
Finder's fee?
I was thinking of suggesting that to my son, but, you know.
Okay. I'll be right up front of the agreement.
Huh?
I'll pay you 10%.
You'll pay me a commission? Oh, listen, you'd be surprised how many names I put in, because it's fun to tell people they've got money. So I just thought I'd mention
it. Can you search by address? I've never done that.
No, you search by your name.
You search by your name.
Because I looked for me, and there was nothing there.
No, you know where you look. You look for your spouse.
I'm not surprised at all.
You look
at your spouse. There are so many Marie Sullivans in the state of California.
Yeah.
They're just over the
I know, but then they start giving you all these other things you sort by.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Anyway, with that said, any other comments? Okay, I'll adjourn the meeting.
I just thought ending on something that was a little more positive.
Thank you, that was
nice. I may not be around anyway.